Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Welcome to the start of our holiday week. This is going to be fun. Everybody's kind of kicking back. Everybody's sort of taking it easy, getting ready for that turkey day. You know, if your turkey arrived on time, or whether it's still on a as they say, let's be totally racist here, slow boat from China. Actually, that was a great song, you know, a while back. But anyway, I can't resume. Sorry, politically incorrect is my stock and trade here. But look, you know, there's nothing to worry about. Let's give thanks. I mean, things are great. We've got a fraud for a president. We've got no energy. Gas prices are going up. You know, we're giving away all our industries and jobs to other people. Our defense sucks. We surrendered to the Taliban. You know, life is great. Don't worry about it. We're going to be just fine. Anyway, I've got, I think, one of my more anxious and nervous folks that's ever come on. So I'm going to bring her on right away. No, not Jean, my producer. No, we have a guest, which I'm probably going to butcher her name, Chancey or Chance Terry. We're going to find out in just a second here. Actually sitting here on hold going, Greg, when am I going to get to talk to you? Anyway, let's check in with Jean first. Jean, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, good morning. I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm ready for fun. Actually, I think I'm like catching up on sleep and getting organized. The good news is we have a fabulous new website about to come up, probably right after Thanksgiving weekend. And so things are happening like crazy. How'd that happen? Well, that's interesting. Jean, the theme got turned down right down to nothing, so that's okay. Well, anyway, so I want to introduce our guest. First thing I want to do, of course, is give her a big round of applause here. And let's see if I can pronounce your name even somewhat correctly here. Is it Chance or Chancey? How do you pronounce your first name?
It is Chancey.
Okay, good. So I at least with the two E's, I had a 50-50 chance of getting it right. So just to give folks a little background, we met at a rally in Milton, and I've forgotten what it was called, Freedom Rally, something rally, whatever. It was very last minute. It was put together by some wonderful folks at Santa Rosa Volunteers, and we had tables, and I had folks show up and help me out. I didn't have a table. I mean, I didn't barely have a chair. It was kind of still a little bit of a shoestring operation until we are world famous, which will probably be next week. Anyway, so Chancey and I got to chatting, just already laughing good, about all kinds of stuff, and we had so much fun, and then I just completely lost touch, which is very common for me, especially because A, I can't remember names beyond 2 weeks, and B, if you're not in my brain on a regular basis, because I have so many things, you know, flowing in and out, I'll just totally forget. And so we crossed paths again. Chancey, how did we cross paths again? Was it a Facebook thing or what happened?
Yeah. You were at, can you hear me? You were at the second Freedom Rally.
That's right.
And then you saw something about my Facebook and messaged me like you didn't ever had met me. Cause you know, names are, we don't know names. I never remember
about
names.
Right. Yeah, that is me.
I've met you before. So yeah.
Well, as soon as I saw your picture, I went, oh, I know who that is. And then I had to think, where? So, like, I'm searching back in the memory bank. See, people understand. I keep just laughing again. When you do a three-hour radio show, the only way you can really do this, I can only prep one show ahead of time. And so what it means is I have to pack just the most amazing stuff. If you wonder where I pull out all those facts and figures and crazy things and go, oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about, it's probably because I've reviewed it in the last 24 hours. And then what you have to do after a show, it's like a brain dump. You literally kick everything out of your head and you just process over again. And so it's the only way that I can do this is to completely erase everything that happens before. So if you're in a place that I met you 2 weeks ago, I mean, you're already ancient history. We've already moved on to, a gazillion other things. And that's kind of how it works. Gene, do you find that too? Because you've been here, you're at the 3 hour full-time limit, especially with all the subjects we covered. Do you find yourself going through brain sponge, brain drain kind of cycles?
No, because I'm too busy. Oh. You know, after here, I start work right away in my day job, so I have no time to, my brain's going all the time.
Well, mine is too, but it's just, it's fascinating how it works. Anyway, so what I want to do today, Chancey has a fascinating background. We're going to get to that. But what really started this chat this morning, we've got lots of time, you know, whether we half an hour, 2 hours, I don't really care. I've got tons of stories anyway. And, of course, you're welcome to stick around for a while, Chancey. We have Dr. Peter Pry joining us at 8 o'clock. So he'll be on in a couple hours. And we go from, you know, whatever our fun chat is in the morning to nuclear weapons, nuclear war, electromagnetic pulse weapons, satellite weapons, and all this really high-tech stuff. The man's a genius. He's absolutely fascinating.
But it's
a real contrast. Yeah, go ahead. You're going to say something.
No, that's just awesome. Yeah, when you mention electromagnetic and stuff like that, like that's just super awesome. So.
Yeah. Are you familiar with that kind of stuff?
I am familiar with it when it comes to the healing aspects of it. So it's amazing that you can also use it for that. So, yeah.
And this actually, and part of the reason I wanted to have you on is because there's a bunch of reports, like in alternative health or, you know, everything from, I mean, you do a bunch of different stuff, essential oils, massage therapy, cannabis, but I'd also be interested in your knowledge of 5G, because that's bringing it to the personal level and some of the other things. I mean, we'll go magnets, crystals. I mean, we've got a ton of things, nutrition. There's a ton of things we can talk about.
Yeah.
And I need kind of, that's a gap that we have right now in Action Radio, is all those different areas that I want to explore. And of course, Jean used to do our life coach report and is well versed in a bunch of things as well. So, you know, I think you two, A, would get along fabulously, and B, would have a whole lot to talk about, you know, either off air or on the show. So, this is kind of fun because we do bring a lot of people together. Anyway, what I want to kind of get to first is the reason that we got you in the first place, which is becoming a citizen advocate and a citizen legislator. And this is something that's new to a lot of people. So let's start with you, what you know so far, what kind of activism you've done, and then I'll let you know what we do here. And I want a gazillion questions because I thought it would be instructive not only to teach you how to do this, but everybody else that's listening, and have a podcast dedicated to what we really do here. Becoming a citizen legislator and how you can actually be, you know, a thousand times more effective than you thought you could. So I turn it over to you.
Yeah.
Let's hear your story. How's your activism from nothing to something? Yeah, go for it.
Well, my activism is usually the culmination of me getting on Facebook and ranting about something that's important. And people asking me where I got that information. And then I share a bunch of stuff. And then they get passionate about it too. But where the fact that was all the questions that I had for you is that I'm not, I guess, politically well-versed. So I don't know how it goes from being passionate about it to getting something done about it. Just, you know, unless you just have enough gumption and you keep ranting at people. But you have shared with me that if you share the bill, that's important.
Oh, huge.
So that's about where I'm at. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I guess when you say activism, you have to ask me more questions because I have no idea. But
I didn't really plan any, but I figured we'd just start talking and the questions would come to me as we did this. So this is going to be very spontaneous this morning, but I want to bring Jean in often. Into our conversation as much as you want, Gene. So you can either ping the hotel bell if I start ranting too long or just jump right in. But you haven't heard the hotel bell? You haven't heard? We have a lot of fun here. Let's see if you can get to it first, Gene or me. Oh, I found it. So that's how Jean and I get each other's attention when we're rambling on too long. And if things get bad, if like, you know, if we're getting a little too rowdy or we've got guests arguing or things like that, then we go to the next level, which, of course, is this. And that pretty much gets everybody's attention. We return to our neutral point and we start over.
Yeah, that'll get your attention for sure.
Yeah, that's why I left it loud. Hope it's not too loud, Gene. Gene, comments or questions so far? Or do you want me to so we start our Action Radio story?
No, you can go on.
Okay. So this is an idea that happened to me literally on a bike ride. And I'm beside San Francisco Bay, and it's sunny, which is unusual. The pelicans are diving in. This is like January. There's like a herring, you know, run that happens every January in the Bay. And I'm just riding along, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is back, like, say, 2014. You know, I want to be the world's greatest talk show host. But I want to do something different. I wasn't exactly sure what I was going to do. And so I'm riding along. I'm thinking to myself, having this, like, internal dialogue, which I tend to do. Too many people, when they bike ride, they have, like, earbuds and music, and it's like my meditation. So I bike ride for meditation.
Yeah.
And that's something you might want to relate to as well. Anyway, so I'm bike riding along. I'm thinking to myself, talk radio. And I was thinking about a couple things. One, there was a talk show host called Mimi Morgan, who was instrumental in getting a recall for Governor Gray Davis, and this is in California, over an issue called MTBE, metal tertiary butyl ethanol or something like that. It was this gasoline additive that was just horrible. It was dangerous. It was crazy. There's no reason for it. Big oil companies like Big Pharma with the vaccine. So big oil companies were putting this in. And she was able to rally a lot of folks around the state and eventually help drive a petition drive to get Gray Davis, you know, a recall on the ballot. And of course, he lost it. This is before the Democrats cheat like they do now. Anyway, so he went. Yeah. And I thought, that's really cool. That's amazing. And then another person that came out of San Francisco, Michael Savage. And so Michael Savage was I was one of his first callers in San Francisco. I immediately recognized this guy. So this guy's different. He tells stories. He's got really cool stuff going on. And so I called him a few times. And, of course, he got really big and huge, and you could never get through again. But he did a lot of activism, too. And there was another guy named Jim Eason. I don't even know if Jim is still alive. Jim is a host it was KGO Radio, which was the big, you know, the 50,000-watt blowtorch of San Francisco. And he used to go camp out at the Capitol building. And he'd go sit there in Sacramento with his trailer, and he broadcast live. And he had what he called the drip campaign, Don't Return Incumbent Politicians. And he said, drip on them. So, and I'm thinking, well, this is really cool. I said, but most of talk radio is just talk. They don't do anything. I said, the problem is, you know, unlike these folks, they said they don't take any action. And I thought to myself, well, what we really need is action radio. Well, that was it. You know, I mean, that's how fast it happened. I thought, action radio. Okay, so for the next, like, 6 weeks, I'm bike riding and talking, you know, in my head. I'm going to bring these internal dialogues. What if, how do we do this? And I thought, and somewhere along the way, I'm not sure when exactly, it occurred to me to, because I had a legislative background. I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if we could actually write bills on the air with regular people and send them directly to government? And do it on a talk show, you combine the two in a way that had never been done before. And of course, everybody said I was crazy and it was a stupid idea. And of course, then I knew I was onto something, right? Because whenever everybody tells you you're crazy and it's a stupid idea, you got to go for it.
Absolutely. You know,
that's like guaranteed. Yeah, why don't you pick up on that, and then I'll tell you more of the story. What do you think so far?
That answers a bunch of questions. Yeah. So
okay,
because that explains what you're actually doing, and that's why most people don't share things or don't do anything, is because it sounds to them like they're just talking about it. And so that was, and I remember asking you that now. It was like, so people need a why. Like, why am I sharing this bill on Facebook? Why am I sharing it with my so-and-so? What is that going to do? And then if they don't understand what the next step is, they just don't do it. Does that, you know, because people want action. They want something to happen. So just like the chain letter that you get and you share it 20 times, nothing comes from it. So
I've never
if they're not educated, you know, if they're not educated, they don't do it. So, education is where I'm excited to get, because once I'm on board, I'm there. Yeah.
Good. See, you're perfect for this because you have all the doubts that so many people have and all the questions that so many people have. So the first thing to understand about Action Radio and the citizen legislature is we don't know what's going to happen. This is completely unpredictable because no one's ever done this. Everybody who's here believes in the concept, or they wouldn't be here. You know, I've got 12 reporters. I've got Gene producing. We've got a marketing, you know, merchandise person. We've got a webmaster. We've got a lot of folks believe in this. We're looking at some major sponsors here. This thing's going to take off one day, big time. I'm trying to get to CPAC right now, which is the Conservative Political Action Conference in Orlando. Well, we're going to go. It's just a question of how we go. I mean, I want to broadcast from the media row, and I also want to – I'm trying to get to teach citizen legislation workshops, do exactly what I'm doing with you here, only on a bigger scale. And if that happens, and the conservative world realizes that there's something beyond talk radio, first of all, they're going to be in for the shock of their lives. And it's like, wait a minute, you're doing what? You know, you're writing bills and dropping off with legislators, and they're taking them to Congress? Well, yes, we are. You know, holy, you know what? Okay, you know, and so that's what gets me excited as to how that happens. Okay, so back to the story. So I'm thinking about how this works, and I realized I was going to need a radio show, I was going to need a website, I was going to, you know, we're going to have to basically start from scratch and create this whole new, entirely new genre in radio. And so I started applying to radio stations and explaining my idea. After about 3 years and, you know, some 400 to 500 rejections, I thought, you know, this is getting frustrating. You know, it's not working out the way I planned, right? And so I kept going and going and going. And eventually I found, and here's the ironic part, was I had to open the heart surgery. And so this is kind of like a wake-up call. Like, oh, that's interesting. Well, I had a valve that needed repairing. I'm fine. I, you know, life is great. I just went to the doctor. Things are going fabulously well. Yeah. Anyway, but the point being, that was kind of like a big shock, and I had to deal with that. And after that, Trump got elected, you know, this is 2016, right? Trump got elected like a week later. So it was my first, you know, my first event after heart surgery that, you know, I was actually home, you know, was Trump gets elected. Like, this is great. So, you know, new beginnings for him, new beginnings for me. Life is wonderful. All right. 4 months later, I found a station to hire me. Okay. And that was WEBY, 1330 AM. Mike Bates was my future boss. And I, 4 months after open heart surgery, I drive out from San Francisco to Milton, Florida. Never been here. Never been to the Panhandle. Oh. Never met my boss. Never had a full-time radio job. Never done a morning show. You know, I mean, the list of nevers is legion. And so I just kind of showed up here, and he was nice enough and brave enough to sort of buck the trends and say, okay, well, let's give you a shot. And unfortunately, I only got 1 hour of my 3 hours. I had to do 2 hours of commercial radio, but that was our deal. So, you know, I did it. And then I could do 1 hour of action radio. And fortunately, I've saved all those shows. But we had Dr. Walter Williams on. I had Gordon Chang. I had some Robert Norquist. We had some amazing people. And Matt Gaetz used to call in every week, our representative. And the things were going fine until I wrote a bill in the air with an audience. And this is where we made broadcast history. We wrote the mandatory citizenship question on the census bill. And I've told the story a few times because it's really fascinating and instructive, and why you can't depend on large corporations, you know, if you want to, you know, do something new and different, because they're just not geared up for it. Anyway, so so I wrote a bill. This is I remember it very clearly because it was the Wednesday, 2018, July 4th. We read the Declaration of Independence, something we do now with as many hosts as want to join in. The next thing we did. And the next thing I did was Thursday, July 5th of 2018. I go before the audience and say, this is the last hour of the show. And it's like the Friday of you know, Thanksgiving. So I guess a few people were off. So, they, you know, we had some people able to call in. And I said, I want to write a bill on the air. And, of course, you know, people, you can just see people scratching their heads. He wants to do what? You know. But the first caller was a regular. Once we got past him, the other callers got into it. And they had all kinds of different ideas. They wanted a national survey. They said, why do we need a census anyway? Everything, you know, the IRS knows everything about us. You know, all these excellent points.
Oh, yeah.
And there were eight callers, and then there were 8 points. There were eight paragraphs to this bill. So each caller basically got their own paragraph. I'm typing this up as the show's going on. All right. Again, brand new, never done before. And so this was the spark of something new, because now we offer coaching sessions. Anybody wants to write a bill, we'll help them out with it. You know, we have callers that'll call in, and this is basically how it works. And again, the nice thing was Representative Matt Gaetz used to call us every week. But he'd always done that. It was just like a regular call he'd make to the station, give his news and things like that. But we actually had a dialogue. In fact, I played the recording one of my previous shows about a month or so ago about our last conversation, because here's the weird part. So after writing a bill on the air, after putting it on our website, writeyourlaws.com, that's the one that's getting a total revision, and then getting a commentary, favorable report back from a sitting member of Congress that he wants to take it to Congress, and eventually I think it ended up in the White House as they were reviewing it for, you know, inclusion in a regulation and some other stuff. I mean, it was fabulous. I mean, we actually got it from idea, from callers, to website, to member of Congress, to Washington in 5 days.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
From conception to, you know, out there. Yeah. That's how fast this can happen. And 3 days later, I was fired. for not following the format or whatever. I mean, there's like a lot of reasons. But anyway, basically, the new owners didn't want Action Radio. And that's okay. That's their choice. You know, they can certainly do that. Yeah. But it was a bit of a setback, and this is when I came to Blog Talk Radio. But in many ways, it was like starting over. So the premise is that anybody, and this is what I want to try and empower folks with, anybody can write a bill. Anybody can talk about a law that they consent to be governed by. Anybody can say, I don't want this law anymore. I do not consent to be governed by this one. And there's no guarantees because, and this is something I really have to make clear, we work within the legislative system. We work within the Constitution. We're not changing the way government operates. We're changing the bills that go into government. We're changing the source of the things that they vote on. Instead of it all being special interest and rich folks and corporations and extremist groups and, you know, the UN, the European Union, whoever else is feeding, you know, Big Pharma. Big Pharma's the one right now. There's no way that Congress on their own would pass a bill to get rid of product liability on vaccines unless Big Pharma was giving them a gazillion dollars. Because everybody else in the world has product. Everyone else. You know, if you made Chancey's widgets, okay, and you came with a new company, Chancey's widgets, I tried it. We got the best widgets. And somebody gets hurt with one of your widgets, they're going to sue you, okay? But if you're Big Pharma, you know, doing the damage they're doing to millions of people across the world, well, they bought an exemption from Congress, okay? So what I'm saying is, so I wrote a bill that basically reverses that by taking out the word not, where it says that the Big Pharma shall not be exempt, shall not have any product liability. I just took out the word not, and I went in the title 42, I forgot, section 300, whatever it is. And I said, you know, vaccine manufacturers shall, you know, have product liability. And that's how simple it is.
Yeah.
Writing is the easy part. Getting it passed is the other thing. So you, as someone who knows nothing about, or you may know something, about the writing legislation, about political activism, about, you know, how the law, how to be a lobbyist, that doesn't matter. Okay. I don't want people that are paid expert, you know, lawyer, three-piece suit, you know, fancy pantsuit, fancy whatever stuff coming down here, you know, and spell. Let me help you there, son. I've been doing this for years. Let me see if I can show you how it works. Well, I don't want that kind of help. I want regular people with brilliant ideas. That's what it's all about. Okay, so let me get you. Let me take a little break here. Get you caught up. What do you think so far?
I love it. Yeah. So that makes a whole lot more sense because again, it's the same thing. Like just with Big Pharma, like I don't. You don't even try because you don't think anything's going to happen because you know that the money's behind it. And if you don't have money, then you're not going to make a difference. You're not, I mean, well, you will, but you do it on a smaller level. You have to figure out how to get around their control. And so it's the same thing with politics for someone who doesn't really know or seek out to know. You're just like, well, I'm not going to be able to write a bill because I don't have any, you know, I don't have anybody backing me. And so you just give up. But if people are doing that and someone explains to someone like me that they're doing that, then they'll start looking into the bills because most of us don't even look. I don't look into them. I mean, like, I just assume that, well, they've been passed and there's no point in me looking at it because I have no power. But if you know you have power, then you'll look into stuff and then they may be contacting you and say, hey, can we look at this one? Can we, you know, they may not know exactly what they want to change about it, but they could come to someone who's been doing it and ask for guidance. And then it's a chain effect. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I'm taking some notes here because you're going to be kind of my gauge as to where we are with different issues. And you can, I hope you call in frequently. I'm probably going to talk you into your own report at some point. You know, I know me.
you know, I love it.
Yeah, this can be fun. And I'll ask Jean too because I like to run, you know, things by her and just to see how we're doing here. That's why I always ask me to ask her for commentary and things like that because this is a real consensus operation. You know, I mean, it started with me, but it doesn't end with me. You know, this is not the Greg Penglis show. This is Action Radio. And so what we're trying to accomplish here is to take someone like you and have you be empowered to the point where you don't think you have to know everything before you take action.
Yes.
So that's the key. And don't be afraid to make mistakes. You know, we're pioneers here. Everybody here doing what we do is a pioneer. In one way or another, we're breaking new ground constantly. But I think that what separates us from virtually everybody else in commercial radio is that we're fearless. And we don't, you know, we don't have limits. We're not limiting our imagination. I'm not saying we're, you know, we're going out and smashing things and causing a stir and creating riots. No, that's not the point. We're not here to take the government back. We're here to use the government properly. And that's why I hate that expression, take back the government. I'm not going to take back the government. You know, I want to give them an alternative source of supply that they're not using because, you know, because of all the money that goes in. So what we have that the corporations don't have as much of, we have ideally, if enough people rally around to the various issues, and people are free to pick their own issues. I mean, I write a lot of bills, a lot of other people write bills, you know, and there's no central guidance. There's no central control here. There's nobody, you know, least of all me saying, this is the bill you have to push this. Well, sometimes I do. Sometimes I say, hey, this is really important this week. You know, but I don't say this is what you need to do to qualify to be a citizen legislator. You can do what you want. You like a bill, you can share it. I don't care. Send it anywhere you want. If a talk show host wants to pick it up and report on it, great. you know, talk show hosts are my allies. They're my teammates. They're not my competition. This isn't about a competition. Yeah. This is about a consensus. And so the more people that get involved, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And the more different ideas they have and things they want to take in different areas, I am not protective of this in a way that limits people from what they want to do. If you find a bill you like, go with it. Run with it. You know, in fact, amend it, you know, send in comments. Say, hey, this is really great, but I just thought of this. Okay, cool. Then I'll add it into the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So these bills are constantly in process. Even after we supply them, they're constantly being worked. There's always new things that come up. Mm-hmm. And the latest, see, the beauty of the technology we're in now is that every time there's a change to a bill, anytime when someone clicks on the bill again, they get the latest revision. So these are self-correcting. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, mm-hmm. so what's interesting, and this is what another point I wanted to make here, is that the reason you feel powerless is by design. The reason the reason you don't think you can write a bill is because no one told you you can. The reason that lawyers safeguard their profession, and a lot of people ask me this, and I don't get this question too, it's one of my favorites. Well, don't you have to be a lawyer to write legislation? Hell no. You know, there's nothing in the Constitution that requires, you know, a law degree in order to make suggestions to Congress or the state legislatures or even the local school boards or county commissions or city councils. Those are the five areas we concentrate on: school boards, county commissions, city councils, state legislature, and Congress. That's where the legislation happens. And so those are our main areas of focus. You know, does that mean I don't comment on the Supreme Court? Yeah, I comment on them all the time, especially when they screw up.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of investigation that goes on here too. Yeah, go ahead. I'm rambling on a bit, so let me get you caught up.
No, I'm a talker in between, so forgive me. But no, that I completely get it. Yeah, that you do mm-hmm. because you have the background knowledge, it comes out easily. It's kind of like if I've owned a spa, so if someone comes to me and I think I want to open a spa, but it has to be foolproof and it's got to have all these things. And I'm like, no, you just do something. You just start.
You own a spa?
You know. I used to. So that was. Yeah, that's
are you
going to
put
story.
You going to put cucumbers on my eyes and make me look real funky?
Oh, yeah, we could.
Can you put that green stuff on my face? Hey, Gene, let's go to Chancey's Spa. What do you think? Spa, excuse me. I've always wanted to go to the spa.
Well, and that was the name of it. It was Chancey's,
You could
have
called it
Chancey's.
I had
it for 12 years.
Sorry.
Yeah,
you can use
it. It was. I will.
Okay, good.
Did I miss him?
Yeah. No, we're just rambling here. I'm trying to get Gene. Okay. I want to see if Gene wants to put cucumbers on her eyes and go to a spa also. But she's probably busy working on stuff. Anyway, well, there's a lot of research that goes into it because I'm always asking her questions about things too. That's why Gene's the best. All right, so I want to get back to the idea of why you feel, you know, where this taking away of your power comes from, because it's everywhere. You know, I don't want to write a letter because it's just one letter. And I came up with a saying the other day. You know, I hear this all the time. Well, I'm just one person. I'm just one person too. In fact, we're all just one person. You know, okay, now what? You know, so everybody's just one person.
Yeah.
So given that everybody is just one person, start doing things. And another one persons will join you. And you get a whole lot of one persons together, or only one persons together, and stuff happens. What if we get 5 million everyone, you know, only one persons listening to the show? You don't think I can change the national debate with 5 million listeners? Watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's
we're not there yet.
Thing with any. Yeah.
Yeah.
You will be. Yeah.
We will be. Oh yeah, but next week maybe, week after, whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Almost up.
But no, the no power thing is like I feel like. So I'm that person that used to get blocked on Facebook. I'm the person that used to share my video 5,000 times because I was saying stuff that other people weren't saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people would get on board and then they would share it and all the things.
Mm-hmm.
But then you realize, well, I guess you don't I mean, you just see it, that nothing happens, that just mm-hmm. a bunch of people get mad. And yeah. So it's the same thing if you're not educated and then you don't know what happens. Okay, I've wrote this bill, what happens next, and what do I mm-hmm. do about that, and how do I get that done, and then you just it's like you're having to go to school again, and you don't, most people don't care. And so
this is fun
the
school
power what
this is fun school
you love school?
This is fun school.
Yeah,
I had a great time at school.
Fun.
Yeah, most yeah no this
yeah.
is fun school.
Well,
so fun school. So let's start Citizen Legislation 101. And yeah. So the way a bill works, in fact, I just had this idea. If you have a laptop handy or a computer handy, I'll probably have you write a bill just for fun. Or it might be something you really care about. We'll start a bill. So we'll see how this goes. But the way it works is that you as a citizen can, you know, everybody has the freedom of ideas. And so that's what we really focus on. So if you write a bill for Action Radio, you can be detailed. You can be like Jonathan Mosley, our legal expert that actually has the bill forms that the House and the Senate uses. So when he writes a bill, it's actually on their stationery. It's really great. But you don't have to. I've had people send in a sentence. I want a bill that, you know, cuts taxes. Okay, great. Well, let's get you a little more focused and we'll go from there. I mean, that's fine. If people want to send that in, you know, I may or may not post it. I might get back to them and say, you know what? We need a little bit more detail. Let's see where you want to go with this. Yeah. I never discount an idea unless it's, well, there's a couple of really stupid ones I've discounted, but, you know, and that's the thing, too. The bills, they have to increase everybody's freedom, and they have to be one subject. So if you start complicating and bringing in a bunch of other stuff, it's like, we're not Congress, okay? And the title actually has to reflect the bill. You know, it's like the Affordable Care Act, you know, for Obamacare. I mean, it's anything but affordable. So that kind of BS doesn't work around here. Yeah. So it actually has to do what you say. So here's what happened, and I'll get to the actual mechanics of writing a bill in a bit. But all it takes is an idea and energy, and you've got the energy, okay? And the beauty is there are millions of people with your energy out there. There are millions more without it, which is too bad. We have to reach them. But the millions of people like you who have your energy, you know, who are writing memes and doing Facebook and realizing that, first of all, Facebook's a Marxist, you know, totalitarian organization. Anyway, originally started by the CIA, it was called LifeLock. Okay, so we know how that works. And now they're Meta.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I'm still going to call it Facebook. Yeah. You know, anyway, so who cares what go ahead. What were you going to say?
That's it. The Meta thing really is like, it's the last straw. So there's there needs to be, you see all these places, oh, I'm on this, I'm on that, I'm on this, and I have freedom of speech, and I have this, and I have that. Do you really? So it's just they're trying to get you all in one place. You know, I can't remember the one that came out not too long ago, and it was like all people that were against Facebook went to it, and they all created accounts. And I'm like, you're basically putting yourself in a hole and letting them bury you. So, you know, stay on Facebook, but also find somewhere else to express what really matters. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And see, I love Facebook for the fact that I get to talk to an amazing amount of people and I get all kinds of stories into me. A lot of the stories that we do on the show, I have like 20 research people around the country that send me stuff. And so there's a huge resource here. So the beauty of Action Radio is that we anybody can contribute. And the more you want to contribute, the more I'll run with. You know, and that's how people get to be reporters. You know, that's how people get to write bills. And we have people that are callers, writers, and reporters, bill writers and reporters, you know. And it's an evolutionary process. And the more you want to do, the more you can do. You know, I'm all about possibilities, not limitations, which is the exact opposite of corporate America. That's why we're going to be so successful. You know, because so my job is to empower you is to say that your idea is valid, your ideas count. And here's what you can do with it. So we'll get to, like I say, the mechanics of the bill in a bit. But once you've got a bill, you know, people can comment on it because it's going to go on our public site. You know, I'll probably comment on it, and it's going to get better. And we have a section called Citizen Bill Ideas. That's where the bills go. So you go to our website, writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. I might as well go there right now. Go there right now. You got a computer? Writeyourlaws.com.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. Good. I was trying to – it's Write Your Own Laws.
No, just write your laws. WRITE.
Write your laws. Okay,
yeah.
Because I was making a post on
Facebook. So anybody following this who's following you, they'll actually see how it works. So WRITEYOURLAW, writeyourlaws.com. And then you'll see a section that says legislation. I should probably pull up a window too, so I'm giving you. And I got to make sure I get the old website, you know, because the new one's going to be, it's beautiful. It's just all this great stuff. I mean, easier to work. It's got more graphics. It's just incredible. All right. So let's put this up here. So this is what we do. I mean, like I say, nobody else in the world writes legislation on the air. We can.
Right.
Because that's what we do here. All right. So the first thing you go to is propose a new law. All right.
Uh-huh.
So you look under legislation, you look under propose a new law. You get some instructions there. This is where you could put your ideas. And you'll see a few things to do. You scroll down a little bit. You know, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you put your name, and you see the spot for your name, right? See, spot for your email. That's not published, by the way. Email is confidential. That's for me to get in touch with people to sort of refine their ideas gently say, we're not going to do that. and then you put your title, an accurate title. And then it says post category, and there's only one choice, and that's citizen bill ideas. And then under post content, you actually put your bill, and it can be as detailed or as simple as you like. More details, better. Then we have a verification, the I'm not a robot thing. And that's basically it. And then it goes to me, and I decide, if it's a decent idea. Even if it's an idea I disagree with, it still might be a decent idea. I've got bills that I don't agree with at all, but they were valid. And because I don't have all the answers, I'm not here to monopolize the information. So basically, that's all it is. So you post it, and then we start working with it. It's that simple. It's the citizen bill ideas. And then we take public comments. People talk about it on the air. I'll probably have you on to talk about your bill. People will call in with different ideas. They'll make comments. I'll make comments. People will type in comments onto the site. And then we refine it. And when we think it's good enough to go to Congress, the state legislature, school board, city councils, or county commissions, then we move it to all proposed laws. And those are the ones that are ready to go or have already gone. Most of them have already gone somewhere.
Yeah.
And this is where the problem comes. The problem comes because we get them to members of Congress. We get them to state legislators. We send them to the governor. I've got press releases we're sending out now. We send all these bills to all these places. And that's where they sit. We have bills in Veterans Affairs. We have a Veterans Affairs whistleblower reform bill written by an actual Veterans Affairs whistleblower sitting in the Veterans Affairs Committee. It's been there for about 3 years.
Yeah.
I wrote two bills for the Florida state legislature in the special session. I think our two bills are far better than anything the entire Florida state legislature wrote. And I'll stand by them.
Yeah.
But they didn't get taken up, and I'm hoping to get them taken up by the regular session. I'm not surprised they didn't get taken up in this session. That was pretty much a done deal before they ever met. The governor and the speaker and the Senate president got together over lunch and said, "All right, men, what should we do here?" and they basically cranked out the bills and off they went. So that's the process of writing a bill. Your name, your email, you post the title, you select citizen bill ideas, you write your bill, you prove you're not a robot, and you send it in. Questions?
Okay. No, I get it. This website, it makes it, when it's, like you said, it's being worked on. But what people need to know is that they need to go to this, even if they don't have a bill that they want to write, because some people just want to support other people, and then they click on these and they share them, apparently. And
share the link. That simple.
You
can share. This is what we need. This is where we need an army across the country, and this is where votes and popular opinion are still more powerful than special interests, large corporations, and billionaire individuals. Okay, so you can take all the George Soroses and all the big pharmas, and you can take the Archer Daniels Midland with their stupid ethanol subsidy and all the price supports for sugar farms that don't need it, and you can take all the product liability the vaccine manufacturers don't have, and we can beat all of them with enough people and enough votes. However, they are organized, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're not organized yet. And so what we need to do, so what you can do, the best thing you can do is, I say, share the bills and share the show. It's just that simple. Pick the bills that you like, send them to your friends, and have your friends and family send them in. And the other thing is media. Okay, media, most people in media think of other people in media as their enemy, as their competitors. They're my teammates. So if you can call any other talk show, if you can get local media, national media, regional media, social media, these are all media. All right. And so anytime you can share something you believe in, and if other people start sharing it, and then we start getting bigger and bigger and off it goes. So the bigger the consensus, the more people agree with a particular issue. And I'll tell you, I don't think there's anybody outside of Congress that doesn't want product liability on the vaccine manufacturers, even if they love their vaccine. They still want to have the responsibility and just basic fairness. See, Americans are basically a fair people.
Yeah.
And so they, if Chancey's Widget Company or Chancey's Essential Oils, has product liability, then why shouldn't Pfizer?
Right. Yeah. And they, that's the problem, is they don't.
Yeah.
I mean, Pfizer absolutely doesn't want liability.
Exactly. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you got to get a bunch of people that, mm-hmm. and apparently death doesn't matter. So you got to find something else that matters.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest problem, this is where someone like you can really help me. The biggest problem is there are millions of people across the country, mostly Trump voters, but, you know, a lot more beyond that. But you got 80 million Trump voters. You've got probably another 80 to 100 million, you know, independents, interested people, conservatives, patriots, constitutionalists, you know, religious folks, different people of all walks of life, entrepreneurs, you know, pick a group, right, that want to do something. And they don't know what to do. And you look at the traditional parties, the Republican parties, what do they say to do? Give us money. Vote for us. So people give them money and they vote for them. And what happens? Well, they sell they sell out everybody. Nothing. You get Paul Ryan as speaker or something horrible happens. So tell me about disillusionment. So where do you feel empowered and where do you feel unempowered by the process?
I guess the empowerment is that, if I feel empowered that if I wanted to get educated more and figure out what I wanted as a bill, that someone would listen, and so I could do that, and or sharing a bill that has already been written in professional manner that would get attention of someone that probably knows more than me about what's going on.
And then I got to stop you right there. I interrupted. I'm sorry. We're probably as bad. We're both like ADHD driven, so this is great. But you said two. Hey, listen. Let me just take a quick break here. I'm gonna play my surf promo. You know, I talk about us being part of the ADHD network. I mean that seriously. So let me play something kind of fun here, and then I'll be right back. Okay. I was writing a couple of things down. You made a couple of excellent points. I want to do that, but just for the fun of it, here. This is another thing we do here.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
So you get it?
I get it.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. You know, and so this is what happens when I take a bunch of production courses at a small community college, Ohlone College in Fremont, California. Thank you very much. You know, my broadcast alma mater, where I'm at the age of 56 taking courses with a bunch of 18-year-olds in radio production. It was hysterical, but, you know, never underestimate community colleges because they're wonderful. All right. So you said something really interesting, and this goes right to the heart of the problem. You know, having bills written in a professional manner and getting advice from somebody who knows more than you. We write bills any way we damn well please. Okay. And I mean, they're logical and simple, but the idea, and this, you know, I don't mean this as a criticism, because what you said is so accurate and so right on for so many millions of people. You want approval. Yeah. You want like a lawyer's approval or someone that knows more than you. Okay.
Right.
You already have, as most Americans already have, common sense. Okay. You got a brain, you got logic, you've got intelligence. This isn't, you know, multi-focused, you know, neuro brain surgery. This is speaking from your heart and having the courage to do so. We will help sculpt the rest. If you've got the heart, if you've got the energy and just some basic intelligence, you've got everything you need to be a citizen legislator. And this idea that it needs pre-approval. And I can name a bunch of names of people that are professionals themselves. You know, they're perfectly happy doing their profession, but all of a sudden it comes to, wait a minute, that's legal stuff. Don't you need a lawyer to approve your bills before you send them in? Hell no. You know, in fact, that's the last thing I want is a bunch of lawyers. And that, nothing against Jonathan Mosley, who's our legal expert, who's just a genius and a really wonderful person. You should hear him talk about the legal profession. And then get him started on the judges.
Yeah.
Oh, it's hysterical. He's on Thursdays, 7:30. It's great. But the thing, but I want to get you to a place where you don't worry about whether it has a professional look to somebody else, because you're speaking your truth. You're speaking from the heart. You're saying something that you consent to be governed by. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, that was what I was excited about. That was what was empowering, is I could just put a bunch of gibberish that makes sense to me in a thing, and then y'all are going to take it and, like, help me figure out how to put it into words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, that's what's exciting. And so you don't – people don't know that unless they go to this website and fill out that form. And then
and listen
see
to the
other ones that have already been written. And then you can just literally – I'm a copy and paste person, and I want the gist of it. I don't want to have to copy a whole bunch of stuff that people aren't going to read about 230 of Communications Decency Act. Like, I want to know what that act is, and then post it and say, "Read this,
get on board,
and share."
Let's pull that one up. That's a good one to talk about. Let's pull
it up. Yeah, I don't even know. I'm pulling it up. Yes, it's up. Got
it. It's under all proposed laws. It's probably the fastest place to find it. Bill of Rights.
No, I've got it.
This is our bill.
Eliminating censorship from big tech, version 2.
Yeah. Yep. So I wrote that July 19th of this year, and it's in Citizen Bill Ideas, where all bills start. I moved it to propose laws because I've already sent it out everywhere, literally everywhere.
Yeah,
so,
I like it. Yeah.
So the best thing to do is to read the rationale. So before the first thing we do with any bill is we write why we need it. Okay.
Right.
And so very simple, very straightforward. So we have like a paragraph or two as to why we need it and what's going on. So there's three parts to any bill. The simplest part is the rationale or the introduction, why you need it. The second part is, well, what's the old law? You know, what law are you changing? Where is it? And so we cite the actual bill, and we put enough of the old law of the U.S. code, the state code, the local ordinance, the city, you know, ordinance, or whatever it is we're changing or amending or adding to. We put that in the bill so people know where to go in the law to see what's already there. And then the third thing we put in is our change. We could be removing a section of law or an entire law. We could be adding an entire law or an entire department. In fact, I wrote two bills, one for the Department of Freedom, because no government's ever had a Department of Freedom, and the other for the Department of Innovation. These are some of the earliest two bills I wrote, all right? You know, the Department of Innovation I wrote for Newt Gingrich. The Department of Freedom I wrote for Mike Huckabee. And so I sent them to him several times. So, like, guys, you know, here's your chance to run your own government department for all the things you've wanted to do. I mean, they haven't taken me up on it yet. Not to say they have to do it, but I mean, anybody's open to these are both elected offices. But those are the kind of things that we think about here, is the things that no one else has thought about. So let's go to Section 230, eliminating censorship. So everybody knows the big tech censors, right? Everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's been a victim of the 30-day suspension. Everybody that's, you know, that's an activist. Everybody with an opinion, unless you follow the socialist, Marxist, Muslim line of Facebook, you're going to get something happen. Suspended, fake news, you know, this is, you know, completely false, partially false, 60% false, whatever the false they have. So everybody's been a victim of big tech censorship. So I looked at that and thought to myself, okay, well, you know, I'm listening to, you know, Congress is saying, well, we might have to have antitrust laws. Let's break up Facebook. Oh, great. So now you have five corrupt corporations where one corrupt corporation exists now. Great. That's not going to solve anything. The second thing is we need regulations. Okay, regulations. The Congress is big on regulations, right? So what happens as soon as Congress proposes regulations, Facebook sends up two fake whistleblowers basically directing Congress to how to best regulate Facebook so they can get rid of all their competition. That's not going to work either. All right?
No.
So if you go through the bill, let's just read the first section. This is the rationale. This is my second bill to amend Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, now part of Title 47 of the U.S. Code. My first bill is way more complex and harder to understand than this new and improved version. Is how the new bill works. Okay? Really straightforward. You know exactly what I'm doing, and you've got the title. So Title 47 of the U.S. Code. All you have to go to is U.S. Code Title 47. It's like, oh, Section 230. Oh, there's the bill. And it's called the Communications Decency Act. But if you go to Title, if you just put in your web browser right now, Title 47, Section 230, you're going to get the law we're talking about.
Okay.
Don't have to be a lawyer, do you? It's right there. No big deal. No big mystery, right? So we're demystifying the law. That's another huge thing we do.
Yeah.
So we're taking someone, you know, you with all your energy, enthusiasm, and drive, and Facebook memes and all the stuff you've been punching out, you're the keyboard warrioring, which is good. You know, but now we're going to direct it in ways that are going to scare the hell out of the deep state.
Mm-hmm.
this is ultimately where we're going with this, okay? And so, you know, when you look at how simple this is, it's staggeringly simple. You know, we don't have 5,000 pages of BS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and anybody can read. It's one page. This bill's one page. Okay. So and here's let me more comments, and I want to get to the second paragraph. You know, feel free to expand.
No, yeah, good. I'm going. I'm on.
Okay.
It. Mm-hmm.
All right, good. Well, let me give the second paragraph. Where all the problems appear to be centered in law, which allows for quote big tech censorship, is in the civil liability section of Section 230(c)(2), particularly the quote good faith power, which says that providers of interactive computer services, social media, and search engines, in other words, big tech, aren't liable in civil lawsuits for, quote, any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, otherwise objectionable can mean any damn thing they want. This is why this law sucks. It completely sucks.
Yeah.
All right? So you understand so far? Makes sense? Pretty clear? You're not a lawyer? You're with me? Okay.
Yep.
Last sentence. The worst term being otherwise objectionable. Oh, I even answered my own question, because that can mean anything big tech wants it to mean. Yeah, see, I repeat myself. I actually wrote it right here in the bill. So now you know what the problem is. You know it's Title 47 of the U.S. Code, Section 230. You know, you know exactly where to find it. You know what the problem is. You've got this good faith power of interactive computer services. Okay, interactive computer services in law means social media and search engines. In other words, big tech. So you know what that is, right? So in one paragraph, I basically summed up the problem, explained the situation, and showed you exactly where the main issue is, otherwise objectionable. In other words, they have the ability in law with good faith, whatever the hell that means, to restrict any material they consider obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable. Which means they can do anything they damn well please, and it's there in law, okay? So we need to change that.
Yeah.
So as Congress runs around chasing their tail, talking about antitrust and regulations provided by Facebook for Facebook, we've written a very simple, straightforward bill that basically changes everything. Let me get to the next paragraph. So are you still with me? Any questions so far?
Nope.
Okay. Paragraph 3. Section 230(c)(2) turns out to be for the provider, to be for the provider, because users don't have to sue providers to remove anything objectionable. This is for the provider. I mean, sometimes when I read these things, I find mistakes in my own bills. So Section 230(c)(2) turns out to be for the provider because users, that's us, don't have to sue providers, that's big tech, to remove anything objectionable. They can simply block, remove, unfriend, not like, cancel their account or any number of other things to stop anything they don't want to see. So in other words, I could probably explain that better. I might do a revision here. But see, there's users and there's providers. The providers are big tech of social media and search engines, right? We're the users, okay?
Right.
Now, there's supposed to be a separation between us, but there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can separate ourselves from other users anytime we want to. We can unfriend them. We can block them. We can not like something. We can cancel the account. We can do any number of things to not see what we don't want to see. We don't need big brother or big sister watching over us telling us what we can or can't see, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it says those decisions, however, are made by individual users for individual users. The difference with the providers, here's where it gets good, example, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Google, is that they make decisions for the whole world. They can do anything to any user for any reason they want, including canceling a president, and say that it comes under Section 230(c)(2) and that it was done in good faith. Users, however, cannot use good faith to do anything to big tech about the harassment, victimization, censorship, and other crimes brought down upon them by big tech, because civil liability immunity in this section of laws means that big tech can't be touched. No one person, company, government, department, administration, or any other entity, either public or private, can be allowed that kind of power. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So with me?
Yeah.
Fourth paragraph. What changes everything is that everything covered in 47 U.S. Code Section 230, that's the Communications Decency Act, right? Protection for private blocking and screening of offensive material, Section C2 civil liability, is already covered by the obscenity laws. This is the thing nobody else has talked about. No one else has done this. You don't have to give big tech an exemption. You don't have to give them product liability and then give them the power to remove stuff they find otherwise objectionable, because everything that's otherwise objectionable is already covered in other law, and you don't have to make something illegal twice. Okay? This is the last thing here. There is no need in law or law enforcement for the same thing to be covered twice. There is no reason to give a good faith power to interactive computer service providers, that's big tech, to remove obscene or other material from the content and posts of users equal to the power of law enforcement, while simultaneously granting civil liability immunity to providers from being sued for that same user content. So you can't sue providers for what the users post. But on the other hand, the providers can't touch what the users post, because anything that they would want to touch is already covered by obscenity laws. So basically what the law, this bill goes on to say in the next couple of paragraphs is that, just that, there's a wall of separation. It's just like the phone company. And Mike Huckabee really sort of gave me the idea for this. He says, you know, the phone company, they don't care what you say over the phone lines, you know, because it's not their responsibility. All they're responsible for is providing you, in the old days, you know, the landline, the phone, the lines, you rent the equipment. You can say whatever you damn well please. Same thing with cell phones.
Right.
You know, AT&T, you know, or wherever you get your cell phone from, is not Verizon, you know, is not responsible for what you say on the cell phone. You are. They don't care. They just want you to pay your phone bill. Okay.
Right.
So they don't touch what you say. And if you do say something offensive, you know, illegal, pornographic, or if you post something, you know, on your phone, you know, in the same way that you post it on social media, on a computer, or anything like that, if it comes under the obscenity laws, then law enforcement could deal with you.
Right.
The phone company doesn't have to. So the simple solution is to remove the power of big tech to touch anything that is post in return for complete liability for anything that's post. So in other words, they've got the liability removal. They've got immunity from anything that's post, but they still have the ability to remove anything that's post. Well, you can't have that. You can't have both. Can't have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
So this bill very simply says there's a wall of separation between providers and users. Providers will have their immunity from whatever's post, provided that they never touch whatever's post.
Yeah.
Just that simple.
Yeah. Well, and that's where, just like you said with the cell phones, like people are paying for their cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless you're paying for something, they're going to say, well, it's free and you signed up, and we put all this jargon when you signed up, so you didn't have to have an account. And that's true. And so that's why people just, if you don't want it taken down, you just need to check and see. You know, they shouldn't have that power, no. But that's their comeback is like, well, you still created the account when that little pop-up came up, said that we could do whatever. And then there you are, you know. And then you have others that come out and create these ones that you pay for, and then you're worried, well, I'm paying for it, but what are they doing? What are they doing with my information? So, yeah, there's zero confidence in something like that. But it definitely needs to be rewrote, for sure. And just like your phone is taking everything that you say and then creating a way to track that, too. So,
yeah. If you commit a felony, like people that threaten the president of the United States, you know, you can be arrested for them. Okay, if you do that on your phone, the Secret Service is going to come talk to you. You know, if they find out about it.
Yeah.
But the phone company doesn't come after you. They don't erase your conversation. You know, it's another damn business. Even if you even if you commit a felony on the phone, or if you commit a felony on social media, you commit like I say, you know, it's against the law to threaten the president. So if anybody does that, you don't need big tech to erase it or do anything, because the Secret Service is going to be knocking on your door. You know,
exactly.
So what I'm saying is that everything that is covered by Section 230 is already covered somewhere else. So you can take that power from big tech. You can leave big tech. You can leave the immunity for big tech. In fact, you know, this is my – and then I post the old law, Section Title 47, Section 230. You know, even what it says here, it says in its treatment of publisher or speaker. That's us. No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as a publisher or speaker at any information. So in other words – so this is their immunity. They're not publishers or speakers. That when big tech you know, allows you to post something, they're not the publisher. Because if they're a publisher, that means they have editorial control. That means they'd be liable for it. See, that's why publishers of news magazines are liable for their stories, because they're publishers. Okay. So what U.S. Code Title 47, Section 230 says is they're not publishers. They're not liable for it.
Yeah.
But then it gives them the power of the publisher, without making them liable. So they have the power to act as publishers, but they don't have the liability for acting as publishers.
Yeah,
and all you have to
awesome.
Do, what's that?
I said, yeah, that's awesome, because that's what they want. Like, they know exactly what they're doing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, go ahead.
This isn't so tough. So here are my improvements to section 230. Instead of, all right, so what's 230? So here's the A and B section. I'll read this over. And it gets a little bit into the weeds here, but not too much. So in section 2, civil liability of section 230 says no provider or user, that's big tech. That's us. I'm sorry. That's actually both. I'm sorry. Take a breath, Greg. No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be held liable on account of, this is the old law, any action voluntarily
yeah.
taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of materials, or otherwise objectionable. Section B, any action
okay.
taken to enable or make available to information content providers or others the technical means to restrict access. Okay, that's right. So my proposed amendment is very simple. So instead of saying they can do stuff in good faith, I just treated it completely differently. Section 230C1, treatment of publisher or speaker, would remain the same, but Title C will be amended. Now, so the new title is Protection for Users from Providers. Protection for Users from Providers and Civil Liability Protection for Providers of Interactive Computer Services. So don't lump everybody into the same. Section 2, Civil Liability, would now say no provider of interactive computer services shall be liable for any action, interaction, anything post, or any content from or by any user of interactive computer services. So there's their liability.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Right.
Make sense? Don't have to be a lawyer
mm-hmm.
yet, do you? It's all good.
Nope.
Okay. Section
yep.
A. Section B. Any infringement, interaction, or interference, no matter how minuscule, with the actions, interactions, postings, or content of any user of interactive computer services by any provider of interactive computer services shall void and revoke civil liability protection from that provider.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the whole thing.
I like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
a lawyer yet. You haven't gone to law school.
No.
You don't have a degree.
No, yeah.
But very simply.
That's what people are just needing. Like that proposed amendment, I don't,
mm-hmm.
that would be what someone needs to get behind. So yeah.
yeah.
So it's all good. I mean, I get the concept, and people need to be figuring it out because
mm-hmm.
they've got the power. Well, you know, they've got more power than they think they have. So.
That's the key. This is where I need the help. This is what I'm not. I mean, I'm the ideas guy. I'm
yeah.
the one that sits. I'm the nerd that sits here and writes this stuff. Okay,
mm.
I'm the one that goes into the law and finds the exact section. You know, title. You know, C15-3 pi squared. You know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah. here. So those two little sections. You know, section 230
mm-hmm.
C1 2 A and B. All I had to do
mm-hmm.
was change those two sentences, and I stopped big tech censorship. Cold.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That is the power of citizen legislation.
Right.
See? No
yeah.
lawyers. No approval of anybody else. You know, I don't have permission to send this to Congress. Now, here's the step where I need the help. You and 5 million other people need to send this to every media outlet in the country and every member of Congress and the Senate. Every member
yeah.
of the House and the Senate. And say, we want this.
Yes.
And then the national debate changed. And then watch the news start to report on the solutions. You know, One American News, maybe Newsmax, who knows. Fox News, I'm still worried about. But anyway, One American News, I bet you would report it. Well, here's the problem, and here's the citizen legislative solution. That's where I want to get to.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
And then wouldn't be that, you know, so
okay.
they become, instead of journalists, because there are no journalists anymore, there's no such thing as objectivity. The left has taken away objectivity.
Hang on.
Right? And so now everybody needs to become
yeah.
conservative news advocates. Or just basically news advocates, independent news advocates. But that's it.
Yeah.
I want to take a break here in a couple minutes and I'll play something. So that's basically what I wanted to accomplish, to just take this one bill and show you how simple it is if you know where to go. And I just research it. I'm not a genius. I'm not a legal mastermind. You know, I'm just a guy with a computer and a lot of curiosity. So
yeah.
I read. And I looked at it and I said, well, there's the yeah. problem. I found it. It's right here. Section 230, you know, Title 47, Section 230, C1, 2, A, and B.
Yeah. And that's foreign language to someone like me, because I do
yeah.
not care. But,
but it's right
I
here in
want
the bill.
Someone who does. Yeah,
yeah.
I want
yeah.
someone who does. So
okay.
if we who do not care about Section 230, I just want to take – so that's where I'll be telling people, like, look, if you don't have any political whatever, there's still power in your word. Again, we know that there's power in our word, and we can stand outside somewhere and throw things or have a picket sign, and we like to use our word that way, and it's sometimes not as effective. But they don't want to go into this because they feel like they have to find Section 230C2. Like, most people don't want to do that.
Starting their bill. So that's what I put in the bill. Yeah. I put an introduction and a rationale. I put the old law, and I put what we propose. That's the format.
Right. And that's, I know. It. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a good thing. I'm telling you it's a good thing that you are already doing it.
Yeah.
And other people don't want to do it. Yeah. So that's where we're at.
I don't mind writing. And we have a lot of people writing the bills. You know, we have a lot of folks doing this, and more people will do it. And a lot of times people, they have to go through that evolution. It's like, well, I can't do it. I'm just one person. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if I'm using the right language. I don't care about the right language. Mm-hmm. I want you to speak English. I want you to speak from your heart. I want you to tell what you want. Mm-hmm. We will find where it is in the law.
Right.
And that's part of the service of Action Radio. We will find where it is. So if you have an idea, you know, we can go for it. And if you could you now explain to people that big tech has immunity, you know, because, and they have this good faith exception where they get to, you know, regulate what's in social media, and they're immune from you doing anything to them. Can you explain that pretty simply?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Can you explain that the obscenity laws already cover anything that big tech has the power to censor or fact check?
Yep. And it was a law that you sent me the other day, and I started sharing it, and people were going, they were sharing it. So I already had 5 shares, which is pretty decent for something physical. Yeah.
Which was
the law that says you have the right to take or refuse a non-approved emergency use authorization vaccine. Y'all need to be reminded this means no company can require it. They know it, so just keep up the resistance. So I shared that, and people were sharing it, and then they were commenting on it. And it's because I put in, like you did, you put what it meant. Y'all need to be reminded this means no company can require it. Because once I got to 21 U.S. Code 360BBB3, I quit reading. I just want to know what it says. No, I don't want to have to figure it out. And then once I mean, of course, you have to trust the person, you know. So I trusted you, and you sent me something, and then I was like, well, he knows his stuff, and then I'm just going to share it. So I know that probably isn't
well,
how
even
it should
if you know your
be,
stuff.
But,
yeah, if you don't know it, it's right there.
Yeah,
that's why I do the indents and the sections. Yeah.
So, and that's what people like to see. They want to know what it means, but then they also want to see that wording proving that it's something, that it's not just a bunch of paragraphs that someone got on there and typed up, and it sounds beautiful, but what is it? So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Now, that actually is federal law. That's not an Action Radio bill. That is federal law.
No, you shared it. Okay, yeah, see, that's what we did. That's federal law. Anything to the contrary is simply made up. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
But those are the kind of things that you can copy and paste off of this Action Rate, writeyourlaws.com. You could go there, and that would be what I would do, as I would copy your...
You know, I might actually do quick summaries, like a very simple two or three sentence things and add them to the bills. That might be something we should work on. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Fine. All right. So we've got, you know, Dr. Pryor is going to be with us at the top of the next hour. Do you want to talk about what you do? Do you want to try writing a bill? Have you had enough for this morning? What's your pleasure? I'm going to play about a few minutes worth of our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. You can hang on the line and just listen to it because it's kind of cool. But I've got this holiday week, and I'm enjoying talking to you. I'm probably talking too much. I want to give you more chance to talk. But you want to say what you do? You want to go into that kind of stuff? Or what would you like to do?
I do energy work, therapeutic touch, sound bath, vibrational therapy, essential oil therapy, wellness advising.
Yeah, I want to define all those. Let's take a break. I'm going to put you on hold. I'll bring you back in a little bit so you can listen in. But this way you can make background noise. You know, so if you're like making coffee and we hear all kinds of stuff crashing, well, it won't go out over the air. So be back in about 6 or 7 minutes, and let's talk about what you do. We've heard enough about what I do. And Gene, you can talk about what you do too. So everybody can have a chance to do this on our holiday week edition of Action Radio back in just a little bit. Something's chance in home. Let me get you my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. I'm going to have a new one. for make one probably today for this week. I'll probably run it in next week because we're off Thursday and Friday. We're not going to have a show Thursday and Friday. Thursday is Thanksgiving, and Friday you're all shopping, and you're going to be too tired to listen anyway, so just don't worry about it. We'll catch up next Monday, hopefully, with a brand new website for writeyourlaws.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. In Federalist Paper number 7, Alexander Hamilton once again beats the same dead horse he trotted out in his first Federalist Paper, that the Constitution has to be ratified or the states will end up divided in three or so groups or will cause other nations to invade us. Upping the ante now, he claims that we will all be at war with ourselves in this paper, and once again the cure is to ratify the Constitution. Ironic again that the Constitution was in full force when the states did divide, but in a unified way against the federal government created by the Constitution, and not in the three or four separate confederacies as argued by Hamilton and the Federalists, but one confederacy of states who were run by the Democrat Party. Be careful what you wish for. Hamilton begins with this question. It is sometimes asked, with an air of seeming triumph, what inducements could the states have, if disunited, to make war upon each other? This is a preposterous question, given that the states were united under the Articles of the Confederacy, and that no states were at war or were, to my knowledge, trying to take each other's territory. So Hamilton asks a question that requires an assumption that doesn't exist. Therefore, a legitimate answer cannot be given. But that's not the point of the question. The point is to plant in your brain that if the states became disunited, what would save the Union? And the only answer Hamilton wants you to consider is the new Constitution. Hamilton also says, we have a vast tract of unsettled territory within the boundaries of the United States. There are still discordant and undecided claims between several of them, and the dissolution of the Union would lay a foundation for similar claims between them all. Well, yes, the dissolution of the Union would cause territorial disputes, but to use that as a reason to ratify the Constitution, you have to believe two things. One, that there is going to be a dissolution of the Union under the Articles of Confederation, and two, that there will be no dissolution of the Union nor any territorial disputes if the Constitution is ratified. Both of those are impossible to argue as connected or even probable individually. Therefore, the argument for the Constitution from the Federalists is based solely on their fertile imagination of what they think will scare the people who would vote to ratify the Constitution the most. If this is in fact the case, then the Constitution was argued from a huge pyramid of ever-increasing lies designed to channel all thinking to a predetermined outcome without real examination, because the building block evidence and arguments of the Federalists crumble at the slightest scrutiny. They knew that, but argued it that way anyway. Kind of sounds like the government position on COVID since early 2020. Hamilton concludes, from the view they have exhibited of this part of the subject, this conclusion is to be drawn, that America, if not connected at all, or only by the feeble tie of a simple league, offensive and defensive, would, by the operation of such jarring alliances, be gradually entangled in all the pernicious labyrinths of European politics and wars, and by the destructive contentions of the parts into which she was divided, would be likely to become a prey to the artifices and machinations of powers, equally the enemies of all of them. Divide and conquer must be the motto of every nation that either hates or fears us. At the end of this Federalist paper, Alexander Hamilton has tied together every preposterous proposition he is making with the hope that enough bogus fears will be grouped together, and the simple weight of numbers of so many ridiculous assumptions will somehow, as a group, give them credibility. Divide and conquer. I wonder if he would have used race like it's used today. if he could. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Cawley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Cawley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Cawley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Cawley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
All right, we are back with our special guest, Chancey Terry, and, of course, Gene, our producer, and anybody else who wants to join us, 215-383-3832. We still have most of our people on podcast, but I'm hoping to get more and more people to call in live. And, of course, we have our Skype line, which I'm really glad to find out I don't have to open a bunch of extra windows for. But anybody that wants to call in our Skype line, you've got that, right there on our broadcast page, where it says international/domestic Skype calls online. We got our Skype name, live:CID.FDD. You got the rest of it there anyway. So the Skype line works. We have Alan Dawson joining us every Friday now from Belize, and we're hopefully going to get some more folks. I got a friend in New Zealand that hopefully will be joining us once a month, but he has to call in at midnight. His time is a little difficult. And, of course, we had Barry Shaw used to call in from Israel. I hope to get him back as well as international folks all over the place. But I think after we make a huge splash at CPAC this year, we're going to have a lot more international calls as well as calls around the country. Okay, so I've told my story. Chancey, I want to kind of hear what you do and how you got into the whole idea of helping. And I don't like to use the word alternative medicine, but I don't know quite else what to call it, but all the stuff you do. So it's your turn now. I've had my turn. Let's get your turn. Tell me your story.
Well, yeah, no, I appreciate it. I went to massage therapy school in 2009, mm-hmm. and became passionate in working on people of geriatric or cancer. So because they don't get touched enough, they sit in a chair all day and people come visit them every once in a while, or a cancer patient looks like nobody wants to touch them because of germs.
Yeah, it's like they're contagious or something, or old people, you can't touch them because they're old. It's like, I didn't think about that, but that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, okay.
And then they're in pain, and they actually need it. So 2009, so that's when all that started. And then forward, I went out with a chiropractor, went out in business with him, started working for him at a chiropractic office. And people were getting out of wheelchairs, and they were throwing their canes down, and they were doing things. Yeah. So, and it was the combination of muscular and bone that allowed them to figure out the rest of their body. You manipulate the bone, but if you don't do anything with the muscle, the bone wants to go back where it was. And then same thing, if you're doing a massage and the structure is not there, it wants to do the opposite. So when you team up for that, it's healing takes place. So you start seeing that and you're like, well, I'm doing more than just rubbing bodies. And I went to work for a hair salon and that was okay, but it was a totally different atmosphere. So it was great. And then I opened up my own place and slowly had other people under me. And then we figured out that we were helping more people and needed more parking spaces. So moved into a bigger spot and then offered more services. I had a sauna and an aqua massage and red light therapy and waxing. And
wait, red light therapy?
I was seeing, yes. And so we're also working on that. I'm working with some amazing people here locally with Gulf Breeze, but we're going to have some amazing light therapy and I'm super passionate about it because it's
going
to do big things. Yeah. It's basically where we are light and we reflect light and that is what we see. So everything we see is light and where it's reflected. And so if you can hit the body with every frequency of light, instead of having to wait till it's nighttime or wait till it's daytime or wait till the sun's a certain thing, you can correct cellular dysfunction. And it sounds
This is interesting because I remember reading several years ago about something called full spectrum lighting. And they had light bulbs that duplicated the light frequencies of the sun. And the reason they did that is because people are happier out in the sun and fluorescent light has way too much green or certain frequencies of light that are much more destructive. They put you in a bad mood. Everybody yells at each other. You know, you see that great picture in one of the old movies, All the President's Men, where they show the main room in the Washington Post back when they actually used typewriters and wrote stories rather than, you know, made up stuff. And it's just this one big, massive room, like half the size of a football field, with nothing but fluorescent lighting. I'm like, how many people operate under that? You know, that's why I never like working inside. Most of my jobs are outside because of the sun. So you duplicate the full spectrum. Now, is that what this red light therapy does? Or is this an extension that goes beyond, you know, full spectrum? How does it work? I'm curious.
Red light is like a step down. Full spectrum is where the healing is, you know, you get higher and higher, like you were saying, because you get all spectrums. And then red light is a different therapy in itself. So they go hand in hand and they can create magic. So, And red light is also like collagen producing, fine lines and wrinkles. So you can get that outer, you know, look too, that is what people want to see. They want to tighten tone and firm.
I hear that. What is that?
Collagen is basically filling the lines in our face or in our joints. And we start declining that at age 27. So you have to get on top of it. Or
damn, it's all done by then? Yeah.
And due to the fact of fluorescent lighting. So we're not under natural sun and we're not producing it. So it thinks that we're aging. It ages us faster. So blue light makes you look older. It makes you feel older. And if you're not getting the opposite of that, just like if you're drinking alcohol and you're not drinking water, you're drinking soda and you're not drinking water, you will feel the effects of it. So if you hit you have all these elite biohackers that fly and they're always in planes and they're always in blue light, and that's why they go back and they get in their sauna and they get in their red light because of the effects that it does to the cells. You have to reverse that or it will continue to decline. So
the light can actually have that much effect. Is it the frequency of light or is it the intensity or both interesting?
It's both.
Okay.
Yeah. There's so much more to it that people are still finding out because of the frequencies and how you don't have to spy which frequency as long as you have the full spectrum or as long as you have full frequency. So if you just try to hit every frequency and those are numbers that I do not have, but it's the whole body and it's the organs.
Well, there's visible light. You know, there's infrared, there's ultraviolet at the opposite ends of the spectrum. And then you get into radio frequencies, short waves. You've got the microwaves, you know, in your ovens and stuff. And you've got, there's another one, the 5G technology. Do you get into the dangers of this new kind of radiation, especially cell phones? Do you talk 5G at all?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm curious.
I do. I know. 5G, of course, it's dangerous. And the what's even worse is that you have to have more of the towers to have 5G. So a lot of places are not there yet, which is a good thing, but your phone mm-hmm. may say you have 5G, but if there's not multiple towers, then that's where my concept of it is that they have to be short and they have to be human size so that they can, because the wavelength is shorter, so you have to be they have to be closer to the person and or phone and or technology. So they're putting up the big ones that you see that look like Sasquatch trees, because there's trees that just grow in the middle of nowhere.
Like palm trees. I see like palm leaves on the top. It's like, yeah, it's a cell phone tower. Yeah. Don't kid me.
Right. And I'm like, that it looks more stupid. Yeah, it makes no sense. So, and it's again programming us to think that there's
perfectly
a tree
straight,
growing there.
Perfectly straight palm tree. Yeah, there's nowhere else in the world, but they grow straight here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's awesome. But yes, 5G, and that's why we can't stop that. Or, I mean, I guess we could write a law, but there's no, or a bill, but there is no stopping that right now. So you've got to do what you need to do to your body to protect
right.
it from that, which
and
means
how do you
being
do that?
Cellular. So what you put in your body, of course, matters. And what you put on your body, of course, matters. And you can raise your frequency
mm-hmm.
with essential oils, with food, with breath work, with light, and with oxygen, which is breath work. So that when you are in a horrible situation, or you're somewhere like in an airplane, or you're in a big, when you even go to big conventions, you know, we go to these health conventions and they're the worst thing for our bodies.
Yeah, fluorescent light in closed spaces, bad air.
Yeah, and moldy coffee and, you know, there's just all kinds of, it's really crazy. So you just want to put good things in to raise your vibe, and that's where that comes from. But raise your frequency to where when you are around something that is so negative, it doesn't have that bad of an impact. But if you're constantly filling your body and filling your environment with toxins, then when you come in contact with an even worse toxin, your body's going to say, I can't do it anymore. And so it sits down.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting.
That makes sense.
No,
so
a lot of these things do. This is why
I'm
want
really
to get a wellness report from you, because there's so many areas to explore.
Yeah.
I mean, I've looked into it a little bit. I remember back several years ago when I was unfortunate enough to have to spend time in offices, which I absolutely hate. I'll never work in an office. Action Radio,
mm-hmm.
if we set up the Worldwide Center for Citizen Legislation, it's going to be an old home. It's going to be a big old mansion. We're going to live at home with lots of wood, lots of fresh air, lots of open windows, you know, and there's insulated Wi-Fi. We're going to, you know, it's just there are better ways to work, I think. Anyway, but the point was they had these Xerox machines. They had photocopy machines. Thank God everything's online now, so I don't have to worry about that. But there was an aroma that would emit from photocopy machines that made me want to throw up. It was so bad, so strong, and it apparently affected like 1 in 5 people. So there's a lot of people out there suffering those offices, and it's the negative ions. It's the fact that this office machinery generated these horrible amounts of negative ions, and what generates positive ions that make you feel better, you know, positive, negative, right, okay, is water, moving water. So these big fountains in the cities, everybody's gathering around the fountain. And nobody knew why. Well, they're gathering on the fountain to counteract the negative ions that were in their office machinery. They're racing out to lunch, gathering on the fountain to get the positive ions that made them feel better. That's why people go to the beach. People don't realize that the action of water generates positive ions and makes you feel better. It's actually a chemical thing in your brain. And these are the kind of things I want to explore with you. But there's all kinds of forefronts of medicine that, you know, I mean, everything from acupuncture to herbs to essential oils. I mean, we can get into magnets, too. I'm really curious about that. You know, I'm really skeptical about it, too. But, I mean, all these things are fair game. You know, all these things that we can talk about. But, so where's the state of ion therapy in terms of changing the ions to make you feel better?
Okay, so I have a biomat, and it's got amethyst and tourmaline in it. So it's negative and positive ions. And when you're on it, you cannot not be balanced. So it does whatever body is lacking. And it's ancient Chinese medicine, so the infrared rays have to come through these ancient, I get their codes, basically, you know, and it's not woo-woo, it's science.
The crystal structures.
And so when the light goes through that and it hits the cells, it sheds all the heavy metals, it sheds, you know, toxins and chemicals, and then for that, you know, session, you're clean, and then you get off the table, so you're able to have a fresh start. which is what nobody's doing. You're not getting that second wind. You're just going, and you're not doing anything when you get home that gets you back into a homeostasis. So that's where I'm passionate, is showing how people how to just be, like, come home and do at least three things, or one is even better than doing nothing. So, or even in your ride home, doing something. And so that's where I'm working. There's an oxygen treatment that is changing lives, and it's all about that. It's just energy. It's giving us back our energy. Our cells are dormant, and then it's turning them on, and it's allowing people to make a decision based off of clarity versus circumstance, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense, but I'm just curious about the light, especially passing through crystals. So you're saying that the crystalline structure takes sunlight and changes its character when it hits your skin?
Yes.
And that's like instructions, that's like light instructions? Okay. How did people find that out? Where did that come from? This is fascinating.
I think it's Indian.
It's Indian?
So, and I know that's conspiracy theory 101, but not aliens. It's just serious research.
That
has been done way before us, way. And you just got to listen, and you got to look, and you got to trust and believe. And I know that's, you can tell me to shut up, but it's
Are you kidding?
No,
I want you to keep talking. This is fascinating. I love stuff like this. Yeah. Well, Gene, feel free to join us. Yeah.
Okay, so you hear somebody tell something, and you wonder where they got that information. And that's, to me, it's God-given, and it's a something that has been birthed into them, and they don't even know where they found it. I have people ask me all the time, how do you know that? And I'm like, I really don't even know how I know that, but you can confirm it. Like, it's online, it's somewhere, because I know it's there. And usually they're, it's just, I don't have time to go back and, like, try to find you that, that article that convinced me that this is how it works. And then if you truly move into it, you can find all the research you want. But it's kind of like, I just feel like people have been put here with tools, and we're questioning them too much, and then it's not being given the power that it could be given. So just let them do their thing and see if it works, instead of questioning it 100 times. But that's what we've been programmed to do, is question. I got to know why. And that's with it was like that with the O2 thing. It's like, tell me what it does, and then let me see what it does. And then I'll tell you what it does, because it just did this, And that's the way it is with the light therapy. They really don't even know what it fully does. They just know what it's capable of. And they need people to get it to say, I don't have arthritis anymore, or my hair's growing back, or, I'm not depressed as much when I go home. So, but if people aren't trying the things, you're not getting that feedback.
Well, we have some parallels here with what we're doing, because you expressed exactly the sentiments of so many that you want to use professional language, and you want to get it approved, and you want to make sure that you can do this, that it's okay, but I had to go through my own process to smash through that, because I'd ask those same questions myself. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not a lawyer, can I do this? I'm not, I'm going to be sending stuff in that can go right into Congress, and then I thought to myself, yeah, why not? So the question is you can ask yourself why, but you can also ask yourself why not. And so the why not question, I think, is more important than the why question. Because the why question you can find out.
Yes.
It's just a matter of hunting down the information. The why not question is the one you have to go to your soul. And you have to look in and say, well, why not? In fact, there was a famous MIT exam given back, I think, in the 70s or 60s. And the professor, this is Massachusetts Institute for Technology. The professor asked the class one question. And the question was, why? And those who wrote because, which is like 75% of the class, they got a B. The 25% of the class that wrote why not, they got an A. Just a little subjective thing, but it all depends what you're open to. Ah, Gene. Good. There's a hotel. See how well this works? This is great. Yeah, Gene, what you got?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment, because I get what you guys are saying, but the bottom line is, think about this. Do people go to the physician, a doctor, and get a medicine and ask why? Heck no.
Yeah.
No.
The thing is, we need, and this is, I think, what I really like about what you're doing, is we need, each one of us, need to take back our health and what can we do to stay healthy versus running to the doctor when we're sick. And I think in Western, in the United States, I think we do a horrible job of empowering people to stay healthy or try to stay healthy, eat right. And eating right is different depending on who you are, what your body needs. But the sad thing is, it's like nobody asks the doctor anything about a surgery. You know, why? Why? No, usually not. And so why are I find it so interesting that the alternative, and I know the alternative stuff because I've studied it for years, and I know that mainstream, the American Medical Association frowns upon it because it's not what they believe in, which is really sad. It's just like going back to the vaccine. Is the vaccine good for you or not? Well, the American Medical Association wants you to believe it's the best thing since sliced bread. And so we, each one of us, need to do what we can to stay healthy. And I think the thing is, if it works for one person, fine. It may not work for you, but you don't know until you try. And the bottom line is this, does it do you harm? When you look at every medication, they have more side effects than positive benefits.
Yeah, and they're okay with it. There, I have people who refuse to even try something because they got to check with their doctor. And I'm like, no, don't check with your doctor because they're going to tell you not to do it. And because your own medicine that funds their situation. And the or they won't take CBD because they're afraid of what it might do, but they're taking, you know, an antidepressant that could make you want to kill yourself. So,
yes,
not that there's anything wrong. I mean, I'm not saying that the choice that they took the medicine, they may have been in a very spot in their life and it was the only answer. And but that's what the medicine does. It changes the brain. It literally makes you think that what you're doing is the only thing you can do. And so unless you have tools that are energetically changing your brain waves to give you a little break, it's that little synapse of what am I doing? If you don't get that multiple times, then you just stay on that path. And so you've got to just get people on a table or in a facility that they really don't even know what's happening to them. They're just being given options. But then that's where the trust factor comes in of, well, what are you doing to me and why are you doing it? They ask that because you're healing them. You're helping them, and they're not used to that. And is that too much?
No, that's very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just find it interesting. Yeah, but I just want to encourage people, please, please, take care of your own health and don't rely on someone else to do it for you, especially a physician, because by the time you go to a physician, there's usually something majorly wrong. And
But it's not. I always say it's never too late until it's too late, which means you're not here anymore. So, you know, you have a choice every day when you wake up to do something different. And I'm trying to just help people understand that they have a choice. And it's pretty simple. There's things like breath work. There's things like putting an essential oil on. There's things like super simple things. But that's the thing is when that doctor appointment was complicated, that, you know, I had to tell them my whole history. So if it's not complicated, it doesn't work. It's how their brain has been trained. So it's really hard to flip that switch to be like, no, do you drink any water all day? And they're like, well, I drink tea. I'm like, no, just have 8 ounces of water when you wake up in the morning and see how different you feel. But that's too simple. So I'm just trying to figure out how I can get into people's heads of just get on this thing or get on this tool, and then it changes it for you. It's science instead of, I guess, emotional attachment to something. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And there's people that have done the research that I don't have to, you know, and that's where you find good people. You find good teams that have done the work. They've cured themselves. You know, the David Trombley that spoke at the Freedom Rally, you know, they've done the work. They've done the research. It's kind of like the write your own laws. I can go and look at his treatment plan and tell it to someone else because it worked. And that's what you want. You want a team of people who it's worked on. And the more people that are speaking out about, oh, yeah, I tried this and it worked. oh yeah, I went to write your laws and I put something in and it worked. You got to get that. You just got to get people talking, and they're scared. People are, they've been told not to talk. Don't say anything. We don't know, you know, don't put it on Facebook. You'll get blocked. Don't do it. Don't do this. And so just trying to get people their power back and help, because that's all that we have control over is ourselves.
Right. Right now. That's so true. Yeah.
So far. So far. Yeah. It's a scary world that we're in, but we have control. And so if people understand that they have a option, there's way more people out there who I think would get on board, but we've silenced them. So.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys are great. I'm just happily listening here. So feel free to keep going.
I know. I love it. And so I could talk way more, but there's basically where I want to take people is you can't be afraid to tell someone what you want and see what they know might get you there. I had someone come and clear some trees, and we ended up talking about a mold diagnosis, and I was able to find a naturopath. That, you know, so you've got to talk. And you got to speak out about what's bothering you. And there needs to be communities of that. There needs to be a baby boomer community. Then my biggest here lately are clients who have got on medicine at a really young age, and they don't even know what they're on. They cannot tell me the medicines they're on. They have to go home
wow.
and check. Yeah. And so the list
I can tell you the
so
medicines
long,
I'm on. None.
It's intense. Yeah.
It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And
although
we
do have a...
we really are. And
yeah.
It's...
I was just going to say, I do have from Dr. Zelenko and Dr. Mikovits, a vaccine shedder preventive. So I'm protected against those that are vaccine injured out there with my quercetin, vitamin D3, vitamin C, and zinc. And so those are things, but those are supplements. Those aren't, you know, pharmaceuticals. Quercetin's like a naturally derived, and they make hydroxychloroquine from it. But this opens up a whole new thing. Well, I get a question. And Jean, like I say, please come back anytime. We'll take this right up until Dr. Pride joins us at 8 o'clock, and that's Central Time. I think you're going to find the same conditioning. This is why I think this is fascinating, the parallels between what you do and what I do, Chancey, that the same people mm-hmm. that are afraid of not getting the don't challenge the doctor. And when I went for heart surgery, I literally had five opinions, okay? And they all said the same thing with like a jury.
Yeah.
You know, these are five independent doctors that I said, look, I want to get a second opinion. I got a second opinion four times. You know, and at the end of the time, and by the time I talked and done my research, I said, you know, these guys, yeah, this seems like the thing to do. And actually, it's worked out fine. There were other problems with the drug therapy afterwards that almost killed me, blood thinners. I'll tell you that story sometime.
Yeah.
But as far as the actual surgery, you know, no heart murmur. My heart's incredibly strong. Life is great. And I will keep going and exercising. And, you know, good Lord willing, I'll be able to do action radio for a good many more years, lots more years, because this is fun. You know, and this is another thing too, is that people don't realize how, you know, retirement's going to kill you. So all you folks, and I'm a baby boomer, right? I think it stopped in 1960. This 1965 crap, no, you guys are millennials. Get over it. You know, but 1945 to 1960 is the baby boom. And those of us that are in the baby boom years, you know, retirement's going to kill you. So stop retiring and start doing something. Now's the chance to do things that you've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
But because you had, you know, kids to raise, which is fine. Kids are great. I love kids. You know, and all the other things that you were doing, now you can do them. So stop, you know. But what I was getting to is that the same – people that will happily take a pharmaceutical, you know, from a big pharma, petroleum-based, you know, originally John D. Rockefeller, you know, when they switch medicines over to these chemicals as opposed to the natural products like Chinese medicine, Indian medicine, the rest of the world uses, or a lot of the rest of the world, you know, the same conditioning that says you have to take this pill and you'll be fine says you can't interfere in the court process, the legal process, or the legislative process. Well, I'm sorry, you just don't understand. You're never going to. And yet I proved
right.
that you can understand legislation.
Right.
I proved it to you. You proved to me that we can understand these wellness treatments. It's not that tough to understand.
Yeah.
You know, but you have to, but don't worry about what you don't know. It's okay to not know. It's not okay to not question and look into things. So not knowing is not the issue.
Right.
It's not wanting to find out that's the issue. Does that make sense?
Right.
Okay.
Yes. And that's exactly where we're at. And that's where it's chemical programming. It's the stuff that's in our food. It's the stuff that's in the air. It's in organic products that you think are safe. It's in everything. So people just either give up or give in.
Oh,
Just change.
No, this is huge. If I think you're saying what I think you're saying, so you're saying, and I want to get this straight, because this would be like an entire week of shows right here, that there is something organically programmed. So we're becoming like the Matrix batteries. We're all plugged into an energy unit to feed the machines. You know, that there's actually food and drugs and chemicals and probably an education system indoctrination that is purposely dumbing down, quieting down, taking out all our independent spirit. There's actually, you know, I know that's happening in education, but is it actually in the drugs and the foods with additives or whatever that people are systematically having their personalities turn to, sand or what? What's going on here?
Absolutely. The other day, a friend of mine found a rabies vaccine pill, like an edible chewable, in her front yard.
What?
So she gets to research and in Alabama since 2003, I don't know about Florida, but in Alabama since 2003, they've been dropping rabies vaccines in rural areas to keep the rabies population down in raccoons and foxes and coyotes.
And how have they been dropping this? What, like by airplane
by drones? Yes. And so
drone
if
drops?
They can do that.
You got a video of this? I'd love to see it.
No, she has a picture of the thing. I'll send it to you. She didn't want to touch it because it was like in a little capsule looking thing with like, it's all disintegratable. So I guess the animal's just supposed to eat it, you know?
What about kids eating it? I mean, the kids are going to eat it.
Exactly.
They're going to find it.
Exactly. And that's what happened. Her little dachshund that's pregnant found it and was almost going to eat it. And so, and she's natural. She doesn't vaccinate her dogs or anything. And so the dog was pregnant and could have ate that treat. So she called poison control, and they came and got it. And then that'll be the last thing you hear of it because people don't know. So they're just like, oh, okay, well, whatever. You know, and if they don't research into it, then that means that the deer that you shoot could possibly be vaccinated. And here we are. So you're trying to go out in the wild and kill something that, you know, safe and good and clean, and it's been eating genetically modified corn in somebody's field, and now it's been vaccinated for rabies. So you could
go down
a rabbit hole.
Yeah, probably on chemical birth control, too, you know, amongst other
things. Yeah. So if they can drop that, where I'm getting to is, I mean, you could go all out. I mean, they'll drop anything, and it just goes into your soil, and then you have no idea. So, and I have no proof of that, but you have proof that they're already doing it with a rabies, you know, with that. And see, that's what it is. Oh, we're helping you. We're helping you. We're keeping,
oh, yeah, this is for,
you know, in case.
This is for your safety. If one more person asks me to be safe, I'm going to scream. I'm going to start tearing things up. Say, no, I don't want to be safe. You know, I said, I want to take chances. I want to take risks.
No.
I, you know, in fact, people started to do that. And they say, be safe. And I said, take chances. And they're like, huh? They look at me like I'm some kind of alien with six heads. What do you mean take chances? Well, you can be safe. I'm going to take chances. I'm going to drive fast. I'm going to take chances. I'm going to live an exciting life. I'm going to have adventures. I'm probably going to have to move to an island where we can grow our own, you know, pineapples and mangoes and live off them. In fact, Gene and I were talking earlier. We're going to move to Belize.
Absolutely.
We're going to go see our friend Alan. Hey, Gene, you want to go? we're going to move down there and eat natural products and have conch soup.
That.
And did you hear our show?
Yeah.
We're going.
Let's go.
I'm going. That's a dream. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's where I think it also started messing with people's minds like us, is it's like, we're going to take travel away and we're going to take all your adventure away. And then what do you do with that? You know? So that's where, if I see anybody give in that I thought would never, well, it's like, well, I need my freedom. I need to be able to go somewhere. I've got to get the shot. I've got to do this. I've got to, you know, and they're not questioning.
You can't buy your freedom back by complying with tyranny. It doesn't work. We are born with these rights. And whenever you lose that, you can never make the deal, because the more you comply, the more they're going to ask. I want to play something that I made actually before the election. This is exactly what you're talking about. I'll be right back. Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns. No representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution,
No family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
That about sum it up?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I made that before the election. That was made, I think, October of last
year.
Oh,
yeah. See?
Yeah. We're all right. Yeah.
One of us the new. Yeah.
Well, we're going to resist. I think there's so much to resist on. See, you know stuff that I want to learn about, the whole idea of wellness. I don't want to say alternative medicine because it's not alternative. It was the original medicine. You know, the pharmaceutical stuff, that's the alternative.
It is. That's what I was thinking.
That's brand new.
Yeah.
So let's think about a wellness report, and you can bring in any aspect of anything that you want to talk about, bring friends on, talk about legislation. You can bring pretty much what you want. So we'll talk here and figure out how we can work this out. But I know Gene's going to want to talk to you as well. About all these different things. So feel free. I may add you to the Tuesday group, but we're getting kind of full. Tuesday is like all women here. It's fabulous. You know, it starts with Jean, and we have Shelby doing Cruise and Travel, and then we have Josie doing the Latino Report, and we have Paulette doing, you know, Foods That Kill You, and, you know, we just keep expanding it. I just sit back and listen. It's great. It's fabulous. It's like my day off. Everybody else kind of takes over the show. But believe me, I get plenty of time.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it'd be great. So we might finish Tuesdays with the Chancy Terry Wellness Report, which might be kind of interesting. Anyway,
I usually do Wellness Wednesdays just because it rhymes. But
oh, alliteration! Well, we might have to break your pattern here.
Wellness Wednesdays.
Oh, you do Wellness Wednesdays. Oh, that's where on another station or another show or your own show or what? When
no,
you do that?
That's what I, so,
like, you call it Wellness Wednesdays? Go ahead.
We are all over each other. I'm so sorry. If I teach a class, I usually call it a Wellness Wednesday. And I even have one that's like wine, weed, and wellness because people want to call marijuana weed, so it's easier just to get that out there. And then you talk about cannabis and you talk about how it's completely more than what you could ever imagine. But it gets people to be like, ooh, wine, and because I do organic wine, which is important. And then you just move into all the wellness aspects of all things natural and healthy and love and joy and just living a vibrant life and being able to still do things, not restricted, but learning about it and making the choice to do better. Once you know better, you do better. Some people don't know better.
I'm just writing it down. Wine, Weed, and Wellness with Chancy Terry. That's going to be your report.
Yeah.
That's it. We got a name for it.
We
do everything on the fly here. Okay, so let's get into wine here because it's on your list of many things that you do. And people don't think of wine in terms of wellness, but you really should. It's got all kinds of – I don't know if wine has flavonoids.
Yeah.
I know dark chocolate does. But if wine has flavonoids, that helps.
Yeah.
But the idea of organic wine, is it the sulfites in regular wine you don't like, or what's the difference? What's the problem with regular wine compared to organic wine?
Yes. So there are naturally occurring sulfites in the soil, which are okay. But when you add them, that's where these wines are sitting on shelves for years and years and years, which is at a bar or at your house, and they're meant to last for a really long time. They don't tell you that they have an expiration. You can keep sipping from that bottle for 10 days or whatever. And that's because they have preservatives. They have things in there that keep it from fermenting more and becoming a nastier, or it does taste worse, but you just don't realize it because you don't know what real wine tastes like. But where the concept of organic is that in the store, if you go and buy organic wine, there is some. There's good, you know, there's stuff out there that says organic. Unfortunately, there is no regulation that says that once it's in the bottle, everything in it's organic. It just means that they got the grapes from an organic vineyard.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so whatever they do between getting the grapes to putting it in the bottle, which is usually add sugar to make it more alcohol content, is up to them. And they don't have to put that on the bottle. There is no five, you know, it doesn't tell you how much sugar's in the bottle. So you have to trust the company and the people that are out there looking. So what I got into, and it's kind of, it was where the essential oils took me, is that they test it once it's in the bottle for no pesticides, no heavy metals. They do biodynamic farming, so there's no diesel to when they're actually getting the grapes, that you're not getting any fumes back into the soil. So all of that matters, and nobody wants to pay attention to that, because then you have to know that you've probably been drinking crap wine and you thought it was really good because you spent $70 on it and it's from France. Well, everything in the U.S., unless you actually went over and got it, is their crap wine. They send us what doesn't approve their standards. And so, but that's, again,
great.
More marketing. Mm. It's more marketing where it's like, oh, yeah, I buy French wine.
Yes, give it to the Americans. Like, well, they'll drink anything. The pigs over there, just
yes,
send them out.
Will,
reject.
They,
yes, there we go. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Sorry,
exactly.
France.
Exactly. They know. Yeah. We'll take it.
I do bad accents.
We'll do it.
That's
give
fine.
It to us. Yeah. Yeah, I love the accent.
Americans. I'll eat it.
So long story short, Yeah, that's it. So she, there was a lady, and it was the same thing. It's like one of us. She got passionate. She wanted to drink wine. She actually wanted to be a sommelier, where you taste, you know, and you find all the notes in the wine, and you figure it all out and tell people what it is.
Ooh, a snooty wine taster. I've always wanted to do that. Bury my nose in a glass and shake it around and check the legs and get the bouquet.
Yeah.
And what else are you supposed to do as a snooty wine taster? You got to chew it around your mouth for like 5 minutes until it's completely gone, and breathe air across the top to oxygenate it and release all the flavors. Yeah, how am I doing? Sommelier. Is that how you pronounce it? Sommelier? Yeah. Like that.
I think that's how you say it. I'm from the South, so I just look at the words.
Well, you
and I try
produce,
to pronounce,
pronounce
it,
words. Yeah. Where are you from? You got the best accent. I love your accent.
Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Oh, there you go. Looks it perfect. Makes sense.
Tuscaloosa.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, great accent. You know, what's funny about accents is that a lot of people on the show have Southern accents. And what's really cool is we're heard in Azerbaijan now. You know, and I often wonder, because, you know, Southern accents are removed from most journalism. You know, you look at the Southern stations, you think would have local accents, and they don't. You've got these Northeast liberal twiddlies, you know,
yep.
Like the Charleston News. Well, today's report is nobody in Charleston talks like that. You know, it disgusts me they don't have local regional accent people doing the news, so that folks around the country can hear, you know, all our wonderful accents. That's a whole study too. I mean, I love accents. I do them for fun anyway. Yeah, if I get the BBC, I expect to hear a very snooty British accent and someone that exudes the sort of confidence that only the British would do on the BBC. I want to hear that. If I get the Radio Moscow, I want the Russian accent. I don't want some stupid thing. I want Russian. Give me the Russian accent from the Radio Moscow. You know, I mean, accents are great.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, and I don't even know I have one. But when I was in elementary school, they would call. I went to elementary school in Destin. Destin Elementary, and I was from 7 to 9 years old, and they would call teachers into the room and say something, and I'd say something, and they just died out laughing. Well, okay, you know, so
well,
I'm
see,
redneck
to you,
from Alabama.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nobody has an accent until you go somewhere else. That's how it works. Everybody where you are from, is, you know, you all talk normal. Everybody else is like, you know, but I'm just thinking in different countries in the world when they're listening to us, you know, in Australia and in England and, you know, and all the countries that speak different languages, Poland, Russia, you know, India, you know, Thailand. These are all places where we're heard. It's fascinating.
Right.
So, like I said, we got a Skype line. But, you know, well, here's something that might be interesting. Do you have contacts internationally? As far as wellness goes, and would you want to invite him on our Skype line to call in?
I when you said that, I was thinking I've got some not really international, but like Canada, and then I have Australia, Mexico. So I could get some. It takes some, you know, convincing, because they don't like to talk. You know, most people in the it's very. I mean, when you get passionate about something, you want to talk about it. But there's a lot of people who are just behind the scenes, and they're doing their things at home, and they're, you know, they're helping their family, and they're, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to be told to shut up sometimes, because someone will say something that I know I have, not me, I don't have it. I didn't come up with it. I just have it. It's in my toolbox. So let me help you. But then they think you're being condescending, and they're doing something wrong, and that you're trying to correct their diet, or that you're telling them, you know, so it's really a difficult, it's kind of like with politics. Wellness has become, you can't really talk about it. If you try talking about it, you're acting like you know more than me and that you're better off than me. And then it goes by what you look like and, you know, oh, well, you're healthier than me, so you don't have all these struggles. But that's where you've got to get people to see. You've got to tell your story. You've got to tell, you know, why you're passionate about something. Usually someone that looks really healthy, they've got a story. And they probably always didn't look that way. There's some people that do, and they grow up that way. But they have a story. Yeah. And you need to tell your story. I have a beautiful woman in my life, and that's what she always, if she meets someone, she says, tell me your story, you know? And we don't ask people that anymore. You know, we sit down and, hey, how you doing? How did you get to where you're at? What are you doing? And how can
I
be a part of that?
Well, I think we did here. I think that's the first thing I asked you was to tell your story. So I think we do that. And I'm glad you pointed that out because I want to be that place where people can tell their story, despite my ridiculous interruptions and constant curiosity and, you know, childlike enthusiasm and all the other things.
That's a radio host. Yeah, that's a talk show host, that you keep it lively and you keep it good and you break up the monotony and you don't let people ramble too much. So it's good.
Try not to, unless it's me. And that's when Gene has to come and ring the hotel bell. It's like, Greg, enough.
Yeah, I'm going to get a bell.
Yeah. Do you believe you've been on 2 hours?
I love it. Thank you.
Time flies from having fun. So I'm expecting Dr. Pryor to call in any minute. When he does, I'll just go to his theme. And you're welcome to stick around. If you have a question. What's that?
Yeah, I didn't want to take too much time. I knew he had to be on at 8. But no, just thankful. Yeah, and thank you for having me. I'm excited to do some things with you, and it's going to be good.
No, we've got a report, wine, weed, and wellness. I thought I said wenches here for a second, but I miswrote it. So let me make it clear. Wellness.
Well, yeah, you can get into the witchy side of things. Wine, wellness, weed, and witches.
All the W's, and we'll do it all on Tuesday just to freak people out. let me think about that schedule. In fact, Dr. Price here now. But so give your contact information, websites, Facebook pages, anything you want to do. And you're welcome to stick around for the show, or if you have to go, that's fine too. But I want to make sure we get your contact stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. Websites,
Facebook
pages.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's you. I know my people know my contact information. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's chancyterry.com. chancyterry.com. And then from there, they can find Instagram, Facebook, all the things.
Well, that should do it.
They can find
your
mind. They can find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of work to do in terms of not just your report, but legislation. We're probably going to have to do some wellness, you know, stuff in law in terms of like a Bill of Rights kind of thing, or open up to any kind of competition things, suppression things that big farmers put on you guys, you know, or information restrictions or whatever it is that needs fixing. You'd be the person to go to kind of work with that. So, yeah, that's going to be a whole big subject for us. Thank you so much. Let's talk soon.
Thank you. God bless.
You're welcome.
Take care.
God bless you too.
Yes.
All right. Here we go. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Yeah, the world's become a scary place with the moron sitting in the White House and everything else that's happening, his surrenders, his lack of leadership, you know, in fact, every other country in the world trying to take advantage of us, which they can now because there's a moron in the White House. It's not a good time for us, Dr. Pry. What do you think?
No, it isn't. It's, you know, we're very close, I think, to losing the new Cold War and having a dramatic transformation in the world order, you know, which can be done by something as simple as the Biden administration deciding to adopt a no first use policy or something like that. You know, they're thinking of alternative language so that it would still be it would still amount to a no first use policy, and something as simple as that could destroy the world order, where the U.S. is the leader of the free world. You know, because that's the fundamental way in which we provide for the security of our allies, and in effect, it would be saying, we're abandoning you. You know, we're not going to rely on, you can't count on us to use nuclear weapons to protect you from Russia or China. Not that that's all that credible a guarantee in the first place. It's already a shaky guarantee given the great disparity between our capabilities and those of Russia and the growing capabilities of China. I mean, during the Cold War, the credibility of that guarantee was upheld by the United States maintaining at least parity with these adversary powers. But we've fallen so far behind them technologically, so far behind the Russians in terms of numbers of nuclear weapons. Looks like we're going to be left in the dust by China in the direction that they're going. And a no first use pledge is incredible when you are an inferior nuclear power anyway, you know? So, but then to actually withdraw the pledge in the context of weakness, you know, would be the final blow to the credibility of the United States. And in fact, one of the things I was going to mention today, talk about today was, you know, John Bolton, not my favorite person, but a brilliant geostrategist, you know, has an article in the Washington Examiner mentioned talking about exactly these things, which you and I have talked about on this show for a long time. But I'm pleased to see one of the inner circle, one of the elites of Washington, you know, because Bolton is accepted, you know, by establishment Republicans as being one of their great minds, you know, is basically warning about the nuclear posture review, that if Biden does this in the nuclear posture review, you know, that he's appealing to Congress to come in and intervene, because it would destroy America's credibility. It would in effect hand a victory to the it would in effect, he doesn't use this language, but that but I think he would agree that it would effect constitute a surrender by the United States to the totalitarian powers. And we would peacefully, like sheep, you know, abandon domination of the global order to them by doing this. And Bolton goes further, and you and I have talked about this too, on this show, and says, you know, we've got to be prepared. Not only have we got to resist the Biden administration's far left ideological attempt to transform U.S. nuclear strategy by doing things like abandoning no first use, but we've got to rethink the way nuclear deterrence and nuclear war fighting works for the United States. And he has three categories that we've got to think about. One we have always thought about during the Cold War, a one-on-one confrontation with either Russia or China. Two, one we've never thought about, sequential confrontations, first with Russia or China, then the other, or three, contemporaneous confrontation with Russia and China acting together. Thank you, John Bolton. Finally, you know, how many times have I said that on this show, that Russia and China are allies and they're acting together and that we have to be prepared to take them all on. And finally, one of the establishment Republicans, highly respected, has said it. So this is a red letter day in that respect anyway.
Is anybody listening to him? Are they listening to him, though? That's the question.
Well, the establishment Republicans will listen to him. Okay. And the Council on Foreign Relations will listen to him. You know, those are the establishment Republicans and older line Democrats, you know, who, but the Biden administration, I don't know, you know, obviously they have no problem ignoring people like me and, you know, but it's harder for them to ignore John Bolton, you know, because he is a respected figure in Washington. Although he did have, because he served in the Trump administration, that gives him that gives them an excuse to dismiss him as you know as you know as a crazy hawk. You know, now if by listening to him you mean, is it possible that that Bolton's opinion will get the Biden administration to change course? No, I don't think they'll listen to him that much. you know, but yeah. They, is it, but they'll notice that, oh, wait a minute, you know, there's a, the part of our own establishment, part of our buddy system, you know, the people that are, the inner circle in Washington are breaking ranks and on this, and, it will cause a problem for them. You know, they know that they're going to have to come up with answers for Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and their other buddies, you know, for the Council of Foreign Relations types, you know, that consider themselves strategic realists. You know, they can't just leave that unaddressed. So they'll listen to it for purposes of rebuttal, you know, to try to come up with counter arguments so that they can continue their present course and do exactly what they want. That's my view anyway. You know, the left doesn't have such respect for John Bolton.
And I've got my problems with him too. He's like the permanent war class, I call it. In other words, he always wants to be at war somewhere, and he lost a lot of credibility with me when he wanted to go, you know, attack Venezuela. It's like, you know, why? Or stay in Syria, or he always wants to be at war somewhere. But there's something you mentioned earlier.
Now, Greg, we're not talking about whether you and I respect John Bolton, okay?
Oh, well, that's true.
I lost respect for John Bolton when I read his book, and
okay.
I got to the passage as if somebody. I'm amazed that John Bolton published his book, because it's as if somebody wrote that book other than John Bolton for the purpose of undermining John Bolton's credibility. You know, clearly John Bolton in that book. You know, John Bolton pays lip service to the idea that a national security advisor, you know, should never, you know, be second guessing the president, that his purpose is to try to implement the president's vision. Okay. But then all through the book, he's second guessing the president and trying to undermine President Trump and do it exactly what he wants to do and implement basically the Bolton foreign policy. But the thing that really lost my respect for John Bolton was when there's this passage in the book where Bolton and President Trump are visiting wounded soldiers in a hospital in Washington, and President Trump breaks down and cries. He's crying over these wounded soldiers, and Bolton has contempt for Trump's tears and says something like, you know, what's he crying about? You know, we have the best medical care in the world. These guys are far better off than soldiers from previous wars. He shows absolutely no compassion, no understanding, you know, for President Trump's completely normal reaction to the sacrifice of these heroes, you know, and instead acts as if these people are his pieces on his chessboard. And, you know,
outside
what
equipment.
In fact, his whole attitude is, what are we even doing here, you know, to see these underlings, you know, these, you know, but until I read John Bolton's book, I had more respect for him. So we're not talking about you and I respecting John Bolton. We're talking about what are the Washington elites, the corrupt aristocracy? He's one of them. And they are the ones who respect him and listen to him. You know,
because that's what they want to hear, probably. Yeah. You said something a little bit ago that I think is really really important here. And you were talking about, let's see if I can find it here. I was thinking of something else for a second ago. But, oh, gosh, this is no fun. I had it right here in my notes. Now I can't find it. Let me see what it was regarding. Oh, I know what it was. Talking about first use. Yeah, there we go. So write down first use here. What I find fascinating about the whole psychology of first use, if we unilaterally declare that we will never use nuclear weapons first, that not only guarantees that somebody else, if nuclear weapons are used, will use them first, it almost gives them permission because now they can say, well, we can use them first because the United States is never going to use them first. So, you know, us using them first is now no big deal because if they're not going to use them first, then it doesn't matter. We can use them first. No one's going to accuse them of using them first simply because the United States said they would never use them first. So there's no stigma, there's no problem with using them first in terms of the moral, you know, battle here, because you know the United States has already said, well, we're not going to use them first. So it puts them in a position where they not only can because we won't use them first, but simply but in the position of being, well, obviously if you're not going to use them first, then you know, and we do, then that's just the obvious. It's a weird psychology that I'm thinking of here. You know what I'm getting at? It's kind of a bit obscure, but.
Well, maybe not exactly, okay? But what I think about the no first use pledge is, first of all, it's not credible. Mm-hmm. You know, no adversary nation, especially the totalitarian nations, which routinely lie. Mm-hmm. I mean, Russia had a no first use pledge, and I mean, the Soviet Union during the Cold War tried the no first use psychological strategy on us. And afterwards, you know, when the Soviet Union collapsed and we got hold of nuclear war plans from the Warsaw Pact, they never planned to honor no first use. In fact, it was intended to lull us into unpreparedness so they could better execute a massive surprise nuclear attack right at the outset of war. Okay, I've never believed the Chinese no first use pledge, which has been given to useful idiots. I mean, it's propaganda, you know, to try to encourage useful idiots in the West to get the United States to adopt a no-first-use posture, because they know, as a democracy, if we give a no-first-use pledge, we'll actually mean it, and it'll have consequences for our strategic posture. Mm-hmm. You know, weapons that are more likely to be used first, like ICBMs, for example, and tactical nuclear weapons, you know, there'll then be enormous pressure for us to match deeds to words and get rid of those systems so that we can be demonstrating to our adversaries that we're sincere about our no first use pledge. I mean, that's how America works. We honor our pledges, and it's just like we honor our treaties. But, you know, even changing our posture, and by the way, the posture we have is actually really not a great posture for striking first and starting a war. I mean, you know, our no first use pledge is going to be will be honored if we were to implement it. It's the hardest
so we can't
kind of
use,
nuclear operation
we,
for us to honor.
We can't
I mean,
use
we're
them
not
first.
Even all that well postured right now to implement it. You know, we've only got because in order to implement it, you know, you need weapons that are really ready to go. You know, on short notice, you know, basically we've got the 400 ICBMs. That's 400 warheads, and that's it. I mean, in terms of strategic weapons, then we've got, and they're not even really ready to go, the tactical nuclear weapons, we've got about 180 tactical nuclear weapons bunkered in Europe. They're not really great first-use weapons because they're in bunkers, and they have to be taken out of bunkers, and we have to get permission from the host country to take them out of the bunkers. It's a very visible, noisy process to get those things loaded up on fighter aircraft. They're not missiles either. They're gravity bombs, you know? So our no first use pledge technologically is barely credible. You know, I mean, it's already kind of in trouble because it's not backed up with military systems that are really good for first use.
this destroys the whole idea of deterrence. It almost makes war much more likely. If you declare that you're not going to use nuclear weapons,
exactly.
It means the other side can. They can't be accused of using first because we've already decided that we're not going to use first. The whole point of having nuclear weapons is so that you create doubt in the other side that we might use them first. Otherwise, you don't have a deterrent.
Right.
So is this missing in Washington? Did they forget that, or what happened?
There's a good article. Some of the deeper strategic thinkers are not in the United States these days, but they're in our allies like Australia, you know. And there's an article by his last name is Davis. He's at one of the strategic universities in Australia, and is basically and the fact that our allies are starting to talk about this in the open and think about this in the open is a bad sign. Because it shows that they're saying, what the hell is the United States up to? Can we count on the United States anymore, And they're actually starting to think through the strategic equations. And Davis is saying, this test, this hypersonic, this combination of the fractional orbital bombardment system and the hypersonic glide vehicle and China's building toward thousands of nuclear warheads, why is China doing that, China's doing that because they're trying to checkmate the U.S. nuclear deterrent so the U.S. won't use nuclear weapons under any circumstances, so they'll be free to commit conventional aggression against Taiwan. And that same logic, of course, applies with Russia and Ukraine and NATO, so they see the right end on the board. So just imagine, our allies are already saying, this is the balance of nuclear firepower is looking worse and worse. And can we really count on the United States to be our protector? And then we put out a no first use pledge or something like it in the Nuclear Posture Review. They know we're a democracy. They know we are not like Russia and China and North Korea. We don't lie about these things, which is what they do. It would be better for our credibility if we were like them. If we could point to some examples where the United States has lied, we can't. We honor our treaties. We try to honor our public commitments. That would basically be sending these guys the message that, hey, you're on your own. We can't be the global policeman anymore. And maybe...
Well, that's what Trump was saying.
And if we continue to allow the strategic balance of power to go forward, maybe we should quietly be telling them that. If the Biden administration was going to do this, and I don't think these people have thought it through. I think they're just doing it for ideological reasons. But if we're not willing, to provide the nuclear firepower, the nuclear muscle, to actually guarantee the security of our allies, I think we have a moral and policy obligation to be quietly telling them that and saying, hey, guys, we just can't muster the political leadership within our own country anymore. The risks are getting too great for us. We're basically going to go into an isolationist posture and just worry about America first. And a lot of Americans would actually support that. And maybe that's the wrong thing to do at this point in history, right? But we ought not to just be banding our allies in public and suddenly say one day, we're done with you. We're not protecting you anymore. We're given this no first use pledge. Every man for himself. We ought to give Australia and Japan and South Korea a chance to get their own houses in order in terms of protecting themselves before we abandon them. Anyway, that's my view on it.
No, I agree with that, but I think we need to modify it a little bit. I think there's a huge difference between we will protect you and we will be your strategic ally. And I think it's a good thing, as far as, America first, I'm absolutely America first. I think we have way too many bases around the world that we could have joint bases and joint operations with, or they could have their military bases and we could share and do all kinds of things. But the idea that we have, bases still in Okinawa and Ramstein, Germany, and some of these huge military installations in these places. I'm sorry, folks, World War II is over. Okay. We need to start cutting back on that thing. But as far as nuclear goes, there's no reason why countries like Australia and Japan and South Korea should not have nuclear weapons. They should. Especially when you have countries like Pakistan and Iran's developing
now,
nuclear weapons.
Now,
it's like all the bad guys
are
getting.
You're saying that is anathema to Washington, okay?
Well, I don't care.
I know you don't care, all right, that's how you think. And and I would agree with you, okay? I would even, there are many conservatives who are even advocating that if the United States cuts and runs, in effect, that we
that's
should
extreme,
give them tactical nuclear weapons.
No, there's an extreme
tactical
between
nuclear weapons to them. Well, it violates the big thing. You see, Washington itself is anti-nuclear. I mean,
right?
And on both sides of the political aisle, you know, they hate nuclear weapons, Republicans and Democrats. This is one of the reasons our nuclear deterrent has withered away over the years. They'd much rather and the ability to negotiate, you know, peace. You know, Bolton is kind of an exception to that. He's one of the more hawkish people. Okay, he represents the far right among the Council on Foreign Relations and the establishment Republican point of view. And so he's a more of a realist. He's one of the few, he's one of the most realistic among them. You know, but mainstream Washington, you know, really hates nuclear weapons, and their fear, their bigger fear than Russia and China is nuclear non-proliferation. Okay. Their community, their arms controllers, tend to dominate the official Washington establishment. It's not the Pentagon. You know, it's the State Department and the arms control community. They're the dominant kind of voice in terms of Washington foreign and defense policy. And for them, the non-proliferation treaty is the most important thing, you know, that the United States has ever done. The idea of proliferating nuclear weapons on purpose, you know, to our allies, to these guys is just, you know, unthinkable. Another reason it's unthinkable from a John Bolton point of view, although maybe Bolton is ready to go there, I don't know, is it would be the technological acknowledgement that the era, the American century is over, that the period of the American led global order is over, you know, because if these other guys are going to have to provide for their own security through nuclear weapons. And I agree with what you were saying before, that all these countries need to be providing for their own security, doing a lot more to provide for their, you know, beef up their militaries, provide for their conventional security. But the deal was, when it came to nuclear weapons, that we would take care of that. You know, that was supposed to, in fact, be the main thing we would take care of, and that they would provide most of the conventional firepower and most of the conventional muscle to provide for their own security in a future conflict. But Washington being what it is, we moved further and further away from that principle during the Cold War and during the post-Cold War. Hmm. You know, so now everybody's getting a free ride off the United States on both the conventional and nuclear fronts, you know. And Trump was trying to change that. But we actively discouraged all through the Cold War. I mean, Taiwan wanted to have a nuclear weapons program, and we basically shut it down and told them, you know, they had a clandestine nuclear weapons program. We found out about it, and we forced them to shut it down. You know, because why? Because in the Washington establishment elite view, non-proliferation is more important than anything, you know. And
shut down your friends.
That we didn't
boost your enemies. And
yeah,
shut
we didn't
down
even
friends.
Want
yeah,
our
great
alliance.
Policy.
We tried to stop. Yeah, we tried to stop the British and French nuclear weapon programs. We didn't like or support those. You know, the British helped us in the Manhattan Project. I mean, this is right in Churchill's great books. You know, the British helped us. They played a really important role in America getting the first atomic bombs. And the deal was, you know, that they were supposed to be in on it, and we were, but when the war was over, you know, we cut them out. And, you know, they had to.
And the Russians got it.
They had to. Right.
The Russians got
it. Right, the Russians got it.
That was
right,
brilliant.
But we didn't care about that. We cared about, you know, oh, controlling these things. As a matter of fact, the Washington establishment in the aftermath of World War II, what was the name of that plan? Was it the Baruch plan? I think it was the Baruch plan. Yeah, the bright guys in Washington wanted the United States to give up its nuclear weapons. And the nuclear weapons were all going to be controlled by the United Nations under the Baruch plan. Yes,
that's
you know.
Funny. Yeah, I think I remember that. Yeah, I'll look it up right now as we're talking.
46.
Actually, Gene, let me get
right.
Gene to look it up real quick. Gene's our producer. Gene, can you help us out here? Look at the Baruch plan, the American disarmament, or giving up nuclear weapons. But here's the thing, though. This is insanity.
But the Russians, let me just finish the story.
Russians wouldn't
agree to it, okay? And nobody could understand, why are the Russians not agreeing to the Baruch plan? We're being so generous. You know, we have this monopoly on nuclear weapons. You know, they're so far behind us, they never catch up. How come we can't get the Russians to sign on that only the United Nations should have nuclear weapons? Because this was really, again, a technological manifestation of the one world thing, you know, that the post-nation thing that Washington elites, the globalists, you know, were around even then and very much in charge. But they didn't know that Stalin had penetrated the Manhattan Project and the Russians didn't want to sign on to the Baruch plan because they wanted their own nuclear weapons and they were soon to get them, you know, and they did get them in 1949, you know, when they, a decade before we thought they would be anywhere near nuclear weapons, they set off their first atomic bomb.
Well, the Rosenbergs gave it to him, and I don't know, I'm sure the State Department probably gave it to him also.
And
in the interest
others,
of,
not just the
of world,
they,
well, they
had,
did?
They had many agents, you know, who had deeply penetrated, you know, working right in Manhattan Project. The Rosenbergs were just one.
So they had the bomb as we were. Right, so we're developing the bomb. They had the bomb. So
Oppenheimer himself was probably. I mean, the American left has long denied it, but my friend Jim Woolsey, former CIA director.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's published a book recently called Operation Dragon. And it's the first book that's been co-authored. Pesiku, I think, is his last name. It's the first book that's been co-authored with a former Warsaw Pact chief of intelligence. His co-author was the chief of Romanian intelligence during the Cold War.
Wow.
And they make many interesting revelations. The book hasn't gotten a lot of press, but one of the things that they argue is that Oppenheimer was a Soviet agent. And so the guy who was the head of the Manhattan Project, and it's really when you look at the data, I mean, his wife was a committed communist. He had belonged to the Communist Party, you know.
So someone had to land him up there. Someone had to that had to have been approved at high levels for someone that obviously a communist to be running our Manhattan Project. I mean, it was almost like, you know, Atoms for Peace. It was almost like, well, we better have a balance of power in the world. The Russians are our ally. We should share this technology with them.
Exactly.
Just in case another Hitler comes up or something like that. Not understanding that Stalin is every bit as bad, if not worse in many respects, than Hitler was. I mean, yeah, Stalin killed how many hundred million people in his... How many Ukrainians were starved and Georgians were starved in the famines and how many generals were shot? Oh, my God.
I think Richard Pipes, Robert Conquest, in his book estimates that 30 million Russians were killed in purges by the communists themselves from
the beginning
of the Bolshevik Revolution to the end of World War II, in addition to the 30 million that were killed by the Nazis. You know, so not Stalin killed as many of his own people as Adolf Hitler did, you know, but the American communism itself rejects the idea of nationalism. Okay. It's a globalist philosophy, you know, that believes in international, you know, one world kind of a unity.
Yeah.
So
I
want to
explore
exactly
that a bit more about
kind of thinking.
I got Jean. I want to get her in here. Did you get some news for us?
No, I just need to know. It's Brute, B-R-U-T-E?
B-A-R-U-C-H.
Oh, God.
Baruch. I think it was Bernard Baruch. I think it was...
Sounds like it.
Repeat the spelling again. I had to erase.
I think it was B-A-R-U-C-H. Baruch. I think it was called the Baruch Plan.
Okay, yeah, okay.
But then...
Okay, got it.
Thanks,
right,
Jean.
Here.
Okay,
it was a proposal by the United States government written largely by Bernard Berchut, but based on the, oh God, Etienne Lilia, some report to the United Nations Atomic Energy Commission in 1946.
Well, that was quick. Right after World War II. Well, which raises the question, if you go back to Wilson and the League of Nations and that failed, you know, then they had the United Nations. Were there globalist plans from World War I, or actually that caused World War I and then led us into World War II with the idea that as nuclear weapons came out, we were all going to share them anyway? I mean, was this a much longer-term plan than we've been led to believe? Thanks, Gene.
Well, there were certainly globalists and internationalists because there were people on the left, communists, okay, you know, who rejected nationhood, people who, you know, the communist parties and the socialist parties in Britain and Germany didn't want World War I to be fought. They thought it was, you know, a class war between the capitalist masters of those countries. You know, but they were in a very small minority voice, but they were very influential in academia, you know, and in the press, as usual, you know, and then you also had people on the opposite side of the fence, you might call them the conservatives or the right, but the religious, okay, who looked back at the historical traditions of Christendom. And the idea that, you know, that we needed something that would go beyond the nation state to try to unify, you know, a forum to try to unify the world on common values. I mean, that's what Wilson was not a communist, of course, who was the League of Nations was his idea. Mm-hmm. But I think it came out of his belief system came out of the Judeo-Christian tradition of just war theory and a very idealistic, you know, that's why we call it Wilsonian idealism, you know, that there are certain principles about self-autonomy and peace that all nations should be able to agree on, okay, which was naive because all nations don't agree on those things. I mean, especially totalitarian military dictatorships don't believe in Greece and in peace and coexistence, you know, and that became obvious. But the assumption was among liberals of the day that everybody agrees on those things. Everybody has families. Everybody, you know, fundamentally is a human being and thinks these things, at least can agree on these basic things, which are really those basic things were the values of free, democratic, Judeo-Christian type civilizations, you know, and that's not the only kind of society that exists in the world, you know, and so there was a globalist kind of an impulse. That's what the whole idea of the League of Nations was. You would have a supranational body that could, I think Wilson would agree with it, could substitute for what Christendom used to be, you know, before the Protestant Revolution and all of that, you know, but more effectively, because it would be based on rationalism instead of just faith, you know, and self-interest instead of just faith. That's what the attempt. Even Winston Churchill, at least he pays lip service to it. You'd think a realist like Winston Churchill would excoriate the League of Nations, you know? But Winston Churchill was all for the UN, you know? And so he believed in that as well. And, you know,
yeah, smaller is better.
Winston Churchill on most things, but there's another, you know, on the other hand, it might have been, I'm not sure Churchill really believed what he was writing, his magisterial history of World War II, when, you know, he gets to the end and he's talking about, yeah, we need the United Nations, because Churchill was desperate to keep America in Europe. At the end of World War II, there's an interesting story. At the end of World War II, most of our European allies, you know, the French, the Belgians, you know, had a meeting about, you know, American troops are all over Europe now. How do we get the Americans to go home? And the Brit, you know, because, you know, we don't want to become part of an American empire. You know, we want our freedom back. And the British representative to this conclave said, that's not the problem, my friends. Yeah. You know, the Eisenhower is planning to pull every American soldier out of Europe by the end of the year. And the problem is that, you know, the Soviet Union has got a 10 million man army standing on the borders of Western Europe. And we cannot stand up to them. You know, the problem is how to get America to stay. And that was the problem for the wrecked countries of Western Europe in the aftermath of World War II. And the United Nations was one of those ways, you know, but it was so that America would not go back to isolationism, that America, so the guys like Churchill, you know, the British part, America becoming a global leader was part of Britain's plan for us, you know. So we can kind of thank Churchill for doing that, because, you know, I don't know that you would thank him, because a lot of Americans,
not this
say,
point.
Especially
I mean, initially,
this juncture, where we are today, might yeah. say, you know, we wish we would have been so much better off if we had just gone home, you know, and not had these far-flung world commitments. But that was
Here's the problem with this whole discussion is an extreme. We're either taking care of another country or we're isolating from that country. And there's so many other things we can do. We can do trade agreements. We can do alliances. We can do military cooperation. You know, the idea that we're either absolutely responsible or totally separate from is the problem in analyzing this. And this is what our government and our media and everybody else seems to be getting wrong, is that it's not an absolute or a zero proposition. It's not 100% or nothing. You know, and the idea that we have to have a foreign base in a country, otherwise we're not allies. You know, that's crazy. You know, they can have a foreign base and we can borrow part of it, you know, if we need to. You know, if we need to go do a war in the Middle East somewhere, you know, Saudi Arabians, we're getting along pretty well. Let's borrow one of their bases. We don't have to take it over. It's like, can we share? You know, joint exercises, all these kind of things that go on. You know, we don't have to have Okinawa and Diego Garcia and all these places that no one's ever heard of. You know, we've got a cooperative South Korea. Well, let's cooperate. We've got a cooperative Japan. Let's cooperate. But we, you know, there's a middle ground there that no one really seems to talk about, you know, in the strategic analysis. You know, they either say isolation, which is portrayed as a derogatory term, or complete involvement, where we're taking care of and spending, you know, billions of our dollars for people that, quite frankly, don't care, like Germany. You know, they don't spend much on their own defense because they're quite happy to let us do it. So where's the middle ground? That's a real
question.
Well,
there used to be a middle ground. I wrote an article a few weeks ago called The Degeneration of the American Strategic Mind.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
and it was in relationship to the degeneration of our strategic mind when it came to thinking about nuclear deterrence and nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. But you can expand that same phrase to encompass what has happened to the United States in terms of our foreign and defense policy relative to our allies over the many decades. Because, you know, the generation that had survived World War II, fought World War II, and won World War II was a much wiser generation. And they thought a lot more like you, you know. I mean, Eisenhower,
wow.
Kennedy, Truman, those guys, they were
America first.
Conscious.
they're America first.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And they didn't want us to take – they were aware that these other countries, these allies – you know, if they could, would shift the burden of their defense onto them. And those other countries during those years, and it wasn't that hard to get them to carry their burden, because the elites in those countries had also experienced the consequences of what a war is like, you know. So they saw it as worthwhile to spend the money to defend themselves so that they would not be destroyed again,
yeah.
You know. You know, we had the Marshall Plan to try to get we basically rebuilt Europe, you know, under the Marshall Plan.
But we didn't rebuild Russia.
Too, so that they would be capable,
yeah.
So their economies would get back on their feet, so they could deploy armies to help us deter Russia and stop a World War III from happening. And that held for a long time, but as that generation, you know, died off and the memories of World War II faded, and the welfare state rose up, You know, oh, the sweetness of instead of spending on defense, you know, to engage in social welfare spending, you know, that rose up in our country and in Europe, you know, so that these countries look more like socialist welfare basket cases now, and spend very little on their own defense. You know, that was a consequence of, I think, a degeneration of the strategic mind among Western elites, you know, where you had Council on Foreign Relations guys and academic people, you know, people who had not fought in a war, people who understood geopolitics from a textbook, you know, not from real life experience the way Eisenhower did, you know. And, you know, and they were proud. I mean, it was great for the egos when America was so much more economically powerful, you know.
Well, everybody else had the country bombed out.
Show that leadership where we were doing, in effect, you know, carrying the burden of their defense too. But if obviously, I mean,
we
there
could
have been voices all along warning against
yeah.
that, and that would eventually cripple us, you know, because
yeah.
We can't afford to be the sole global policeman. That we needed these allies, you know, to pick up the burden. You know, we can't afford to be a military dictatorship like Russia, you know, where they're spending everything on their military capabilities. They can do that because they're not a free system, you know, or like China, which is also a slave system where they can afford to outspend us always on military matters.
Well,
you know, so
let's talk about those two. Because I've been trying to reserve some time to do this, but a little—I don't know if you want to do it this week or next week—but a little history. Well, maybe we can get started this week between Russia and China. You know, because they're building way beyond enough weapons to destroy us. You know, considering our lack of nuclear posture, as you've outlined pretty clearly. So once you can, you know, what's that line from Churchill about making the rubble bounce? Once you have enough weapons to destroy the world, what do you get the extra weapons? You know, there's no reason for it. So other than each other, I can't think of a reason, you know, once they know they can defeat us in nuclear, you know, war, which seems pretty obvious right now, just because of the excess weapons they have and the lack of willpower on our side. Why do they need more? I mean, aren't they really doing this against each other in a kind of Russia, Nazi Germany scenario where the biggest leftist, you know, on the block wants to compete against the second biggest leftist on the block, and they both think they're the biggest leftist on the block. You know, you have communism and Nazism clashed, you know, with Operation Barbarossa.
Yeah,
Hitler, they had a freedom pact, and then Hitler raced in and attacked them. It was dumb. You know, but Russia and China, they got a
paragraph in my...
Yeah,
that
go ahead.
Got a lot of attention and drew compliments from readers in that very article, The Degeneration of the American Strategic Mind, where I point out that, you know, during the Cold War, when we were engaged in negotiations about limiting the nuclear arms race with Russia, then the Soviet Union, you know, we couldn't understand why, you know, they were building such huge numbers of nuclear weapons, you know, mm-hmm. far more than they needed to destroy us or NATO Europe. And it was because, as a totalitarian state, you know, they wanted to dominate the globe. And our targeting strategy was based on attacking targets in the USSR and the Warsaw Pact. Their mm-hmm. targeting strategy was based on a plan to have a nuclear war against the entire world, including China. And everybody was under their nuclear gun, and it's one of the reasons that also they cheated on these nuclear treaties. They were never content to just have enough to destroy us in a first strike or even in a protracted war. They're so paranoid, they really believe the United States might launch a surprise attack against them, and they wanted the ability with their residual forces to be able to win. So they were building enormous, and still are, both sides. And yes, I agree. I think, basically, to do a successful first strike against the United States, a counterforce attack, they need about 500 weapons, you know, on ICBMs. And they've got that. China has got that. Russia's got that. But they're building up toward many thousands. And that's because I think they both are arms racing against each other.
Mm-hmm.
They both are fearful of each other. The other side launching the first strike against them, and they have good reason to, I mean, China and Russia, the Soviet Union, almost came to blows in 1969 just over the Yerseri River crisis, which you think it would be a minor affair and not worth a nuclear war, but they almost did go to nuclear war over the Yerseri River out in Siberia. So these guys don't require much provocation to go to nuclear war. And the large numbers are sized at being able to achieve their damage goals, you know, against every country on the planet. And, yeah, I think that the reason they're building up now, I kind of think that their elites are pretty much writing us off already as on the ash heap of history, and they don't really have to worry that much about the United States anymore. Or maybe that doesn't mean that they won't eliminate us along the way, you know, because totalitarian states do that, you know. But I think they're really got their eyes on each other, and that's why they are, you know, building mm-hmm. up toward thousands of weapons. Both of them fear the other, that there will be a future war between them. And both of them are bent on world conquest, on being able to, I mean, imagine what the situation will be with the United States out of the picture and these guys able to make nuclear strikes against every country in the world. I mean, you know, that's certainly the technological basis for global domination, for sure, not rhetorically, but actually literally. You know, every country would have to bend the knee under those circumstances to these powers. So, yeah, I think that's the reality of where we're going. Before I'm sure we're running out of time.
You've got about 9 minutes left.
I wanted to make this the main topic of our discussion today, but I just wanted to mention that there was another development that came out in the press that's been disclosed about this space super weapon that China tested last summer. And there's a third factor, you know, mm-hmm. that apparently has got the Pentagon really worried. And in fact, everybody really worried, because it's also in the foreign press, which is why it's come out. The Australian press reported it as well, the Chinese demonstrated the fractional orbital bombardment system, all right, mm-hmm. Combined with a hypersonic glide vehicle, which has never been done before. But then the new factor, the third thing, is that while the hypersonic glide vehicle was reentering the atmosphere, it fired a missile. And our own Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, that's the Pentagon's equivalent of the Skunk Works. You know, they do our really high – they can't figure out how the Chinese managed to fire a missile – from the hypersonic glide vehicle while it's traveling, you know, at 5 to 20 times the speed of sound. You know, for us, that's a physical impossibility right now, but the Chinese did it. Actually, for us, it's a physical impossibility right now to even deliver a hypersonic glide vehicle and a fractional orbital bombardment system. But in addition to that, and their speculation is, and this should sound familiar, because before this was disclosed in my reporting, my report on this FOBS-HGV combination, I argued that one of the reasons they're doing this, you know, is that they could, in addition to being able to deliver nuclear weapons, you know, they could deliver conventional weapons, you know, anywhere in the world at hypersonic speed. And I specifically mentioned air-to-air missiles. The reason I did that is because, and I think I mentioned this on your show, because when I was a graduate student at University of Southern California, my mentor, Bill Van Cleve, would bring in his friends from Washington. And one of the friends he brought in was a defense scientist, a guy named John DARPA, who was talking about possible future high-tech weaponry. And one of the things we have this thing called the Global Strike Initiative that we've been trying to build toward, that the Air Force has been trying to build toward. You know, before we even had the name for the Global Strike Initiative, John Darrow was thinking about that, and they were planning about that. And the notion was, you know, to use an ICBM to deliver air-to-air missiles or anti-tank missiles or weapons that could destroy port facilities or airfields. You know, if our guys got in a tight space, say we were engaged in a air-to-air combat in the Middle East someplace, and we were outnumbered and losing, you could fire an ICBM, not to deliver a nuclear weapon, you know, but to deliver a whole bunch of air-to-air missiles, smart air-to-air missiles that would then go after
independently
the
guided, independently
exactly.
guided, independently
and
tracked,
shoot down
with
the
a...
other guy's aircraft and yeah. be the cavalry, you know.
Would be like ground tracks
or less.
How would you do that? Ground track or an airborne, like an AWACS kind of thing? How would they program? How would you target the missiles from an ICBM?
Well, that's DARPA's job to figure out about how to target the missiles.
Oh, okay.
We won't worry about how the technology works. Okay, on this
I do.
You know, but the point is, this was being talked about back in by us back in the 1980s. We never did it. All right. But China is doing it today, and you know, and Washington is taken by surprise. Our own DARPA and the Defense Department is taken by surprise and can't figure out how they did it. You know, which means that obviously, unfortunately, scientists like John Dara, who had conceived the idea, had the basic technological skeletons, you know, or framework, you know, for doing that back in those days. You know, weren't listened to. And so, and I'll bet the reason they weren't listened to is because they couldn't get it past the Washington arms control community. You know, you know, that's one of the other harmful effects of arms control. It's not just the treaties that end up constraining us, but the Pentagon has got arms control lawyers looking over their shoulder whenever they want to come up with a new technology. And the arms control people will say, "Well, is this a destabilizing technology? If we deploy this, is this going to trigger another arms race?" And of course, any kind of a revolutionary new technology is going to be destabilizing. That's what revolutionary technologies do. And so, you know, because of our strategic culture that puts so much emphasis on arms control, it's in effect tied our hands behind our back in terms of technological advancement, you know, for decades. And now we find ourselves reaping the consequences of this foolishness, you know, where we're falling further and further behind Russia and China in every category. Even North Korea has got super EMP weapons, and we don't have them, you know. But anyway, that was that new thing and the new development that's come out about the China space super weapon, that in addition to delivering a hypersonic glide vehicle, you know, the hypersonic glide vehicle itself launched some kind of a missile. They're not sure whether it was an air-to-air missile or it was intended to, whether it might have been an anti-ballistic missile to intercept our interceptors, you know, to make sure the hypersonic glide vehicle could penetrate missile defenses. But it did something else that was really technologically spectacular that we can't do, you know.
Well, it gives us a chance to steal stuff from them. This is actually a golden opportunity. I was sort of puzzling as you're talking, like I said, we've only got a couple minutes left. If we ever had a president that removed the word nuclear, you know, from just as they scrub language, you can't say illegal alien anymore. You have to say undocumented worker or something like that. What if someone actually came along and scrubbed the word nuclear out of weapons? And they weren't nuclear weapons. They were just weapons. In other words, there was no distinction between nuclear weapons and conventional. We sort of got away from that weapons were just looked at as weapons. And some of them are going to be powered by nuclear and some are not and different things like that. It'd be a change in psychology. If we had different names for things, instead of the nuclear bomb, it was the, you know, big gravity bomb or the, you know, an ICBM, you know, missile. I don't know. I'm just speculating that language is such a powerful thing. These people are so hung up on arms control when there is no arms control, you know, on verification when there is no verification. They're hung up on all the wrong stuff. On nuclear, we can't have nuclear proliferation of our friends, but we certainly can, you know, of our enemies. In fact, we're going to make sure it happens. It's a very bizarre psychology to me, but I think the best thing we could do is stop talking about nuclear weapons as nuclear and just focus on the fact that they're weapons and get away from that, because all weapons are destructive. That's why they're weapons. You know, there are huge bombs.
Well, prior to the Kennedy administration, you know, basically Kennedy brought in all these people from academia that started, you know, the arms control culture, you know, within our within our strategic culture. That's how we did think of it. You know, the Eisenhower administration just thought of nuclear weapons as just very powerful weapons.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we had plans to use them. And we're unapologetic about that. You know, we had a thing called the Pentomic Division. You know, it was that we reorganized the way our Army divisions were worked because we planned to use tactical nuclear weapons. And everybody, the Navy wanted in on it. The Air Force, everybody had their own
I'm sure they
nuclear
did.
Weapons that they were working in to their tactics and strategies. And and Russia and China, you know, have always thought about it that way. They never have drawn a red line the way we have between conventional weapons and nuclear weapons. That's an arms artifact of arms control, you know. And if we did that today, the way Washington is today, I think the consequences would be that we, if you erase nuclear from everything, it would probably be taken as a sign that we shouldn't have any nuclear weapons. And would probably dismantle all our nuclear weapons and have only conventional weapons.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that's probably the consequences. But you're right. That's the way it should be. You know, that's how Russia and China think about it. You know, you don't find Russian and Chinese universities teaching their generals courses on arms control. You know, there are not arms control departments and big foundations dedicated to arms control in Russia and China. You know, that's strictly, it's peculiar to the West and peculiar to our strategic culture. And, you know, they think of these weapons as exactly the way you're talking about it.
They're weapons,
you know, to be utilized. And
I got to hold you up there because we're out of time. We've actually literally run out. The clock has already stopped. But this is fascinating. But I think a change in psychology, a look into how we discuss these things and think about them, people still have in their brain that every nuclear weapon is a thermonuclear hydrogen bomb and that everyone looks like that. And they don't realize tactical, and we've been over this before, but, you know, next generation small nuclear weapons that are much smaller than conventional weapons. There's a whole range of nuclear things that people don't know about. It might be worth our while after Thanksgiving to let me know if you do Monday show too, because it's right after the holidays, but to be able to think of learn more about what nuclear weapons really are and the various forms that are not a thermonuclear H-bomb, you know, going off and blowing up, you know, entire islands and half the Pacific. Anyway,
right? No, you're right. I mean, you know, it would be worth it. I think important to have a tutorial on that. You know,
let's do it
talk
again.
About the full range of nuclear weapons, you know,
okay,
which can be ultra low yield weapons that make no fallout. And have such low yield, you could use them to just take out a bridge, for example, you know? And so, yes, I look forward to that.
I'll put that on my calendar for next Monday. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much. And this is Dr. Peter Pry.
Okay.
This is Greg Penglis for Blog Talk Action Radio, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. We ran a little bit over time today, but it was worth it. And our new website coming out for www.writeyourlaws.com, W-R-I-T-E, writeyourlaws.com. That'll be probably right after Thanksgiving. And we'll be back tomorrow at 7 Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. And the rest of the world, I just have to look it up. All right, there we go. Bye now.